It's time for the IllegalCurve.com radio show. 1 hour of hard-hitting hockey commentary live from the studios of 92.9 Kick FM. Check your pads. It's time to hit the ice.
Now the boss is coming. You better visit.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for those listening live on www.kick.fm, good evening, universe, and welcome to the IllegalCurve.com radio show. We have an action-packed 2 hours for you this evening. In about 20 minutes' time, we're going to be joined on the air by Globe and Mail writer and author of the blog From the Rink, James Myrtle. Solid guest. He'll know he's got great insight into what's going on in Phoenix. We'll talk to him about what's going on with the Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals coming up. Pretty much we'll cover the entire NHL spectrum with James Myrtle. 20 minutes after James Myrtle, we'll have Kelly Rudy at 7:40. Everybody knows the name Kelly Rudy, Hockey Night in Canada, 15-year NHL career, knows a little bit. He's an expert on hockey, so we're pleased to have him on the air. And I'm even more pleased to be joined in studio by my usual friends. To the left of me, Richard Pollock. To the right of me, Ezra Ginsberg. Because I started with Ezra last week, I'm going to start with Richard this week. Richard, good evening.
Drew, great to be here. I have to say that everybody in this room is looking very much forward to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. It's been a while since the Game 7 has had this much hype. You know, I mean, the Edmonton-Carolina series, for as much as people are interested in it, fans on both sides, didn't have the hype this carried. You know, Devils, Anaheim, not as much hype. This is going to be a tremendous Game 7 on Friday.
Ezra Ginsberg, to the right of me.
Hello. Hello. How are you doing? I'd like to echo what Richie just said. I think that the reason why there's probably more excitement for this particular game, even more so than the Edmonton-Carolina series, is because just when you think Pittsburgh's out of it and they get beat such as they did pretty handily 5-0 in Game 5, they come back and they look like they're the real deal this year. And I think it's going to be a very exciting game Friday. And plus, you know, we got our Manitoba Moose back at home trying to get back in the series against the Hershey Bears. So Friday is going to be awesome.
It is a hockey lover's dream, that's for certain. And we're going to talk about the Moose in the second hour of tonight's show, but for the first hour, we're going to focus strictly on Game 7 and the Cup Finals. And to me, we all had the pleasure of getting together last night, having a couple pops and watching the game. To me, the key to last night's game was the play of Marc-Andre Fleury. I'll throw it over to Richard to start. Richard, your thoughts, agree, disagree, what do you think? What jumped out at you based on last night's game?
Well, as you know, Drew, I mean, I'm a Marc-Andre Fleury fan, have been for a while, like his game. Like his attitude and like his ability to, you know, not let the tough losses bother him and rebound. He's got a really good ability to forget the past and look forward and have full confidence in himself. And I thought he's brought, and I think that he's always brought it in big games. I know people look back at the Canada-Russia.
World Juniors.
We were all watching the game when he threw the puck and they hit the forward and it went into the net. You know, it's a fluke. He's played very well. I know obviously he's had his times in the games where he hasn't led in great goals, but I thought yesterday that save at the end of the game very much could have won the Pittsburgh, could very well lead to the Pittsburgh Penguins winning the Stanley Cup, the save on Daniel Cleary at the end of the game. And just his flexibility in that save and his ability to not only have confidence himself, but with confidence, you know, through confidence in himself, his teammates draw confidence from that. And I really feel that he is finally starting to gain some respect or more respect than he had been before, and it's well-deserved.
As we've heard a lot in this series about the debate between Marc-Andre Fleury and Chris Osgood, combination of who would you prefer to have or who do you think is better. Let me throw that question over to you. Is there a debate in your mind, Marc-Andre Fleury or Chris Osgood as your starting goaltender?
Well, it's very difficult to pick one of the two goalies when Osgood is pretty much winding his career down. He's probably got 1, maybe 2 years left, and Fleury is in the prime of his career. The prime of a goalie's career.
A
prime of a goalie's career might not be 24 years old. It might be 28 years old.
Let's pretend it's an even playing field, and they're both at the same stage of their career.
I like Marc-Andre Fleury. Like, If you're just comparing, you know the way he handles himself in big games, his athleticism and all that, he's a better goalie. He's a better puck handling goalie. Although Osgood picked up an assist in Game 5, he's fundamentally a better goalie. And he's proven at an earlier age that, I mean, now I'm factoring in age a little bit, but he's proven at an earlier age that he can take an NHL team to the Stanley Cup Finals. And I thought he was absolutely spectacular yesterday. He was making phenomenal saves in every period. That one blocker save on Zetterberg was incredible. We were all very impressed with that. And, you know, he was pulled after having a pretty bad Game 5, even though a lot of those goals weren't really his fault. I mean, you know,
Pittsburgh didn't come to play. When your team in front of you doesn't come to play, it doesn't matter if you bring it or not, really. I think the key for me to Game 7, and it has been all series, and I'll continue to talk about this, is where is Sidney Crosby?
You've been waiting for his breakout performance in
and I keep
cup
saying
finals.
It's coming. I mean, there's only one more game for it to come. So it has to come in Game 7. And now I realize again that he plays against Zetterberg, and, you know, for the most part, yesterday the Pittsburgh Penguins were doing a very good job. Dan Bylsma, in particular, was doing a very good job of matching up Jordan Staal, checking the Datsyuk-Zetterberg line. And it was very interesting the way he did that. That aside, Sidney Crosby, playing against Zetterberg or not, which he's done both of, he has to turn it up. He has to produce. People say he's playing against Lidstrom, he's playing against the top four. I don't care. You're arguably... Well, you're in my mind the best player in the world. It shouldn't matter who you're playing against.
You have to dominate
that guy. Well, Richie, at least produce. He's got 3 points?
Yeah.
Richie, he's got 3 points. He's -3. He hasn't played well on the power play. It's obvious. But overall, he has been pretty effective.
No.
Well, no, I think that, you know, like in this particular situation, obviously.
I thought Malkin was better than him last
night. 3 points is not enough. Right.
Malkin was engaged last night. I need to see Crosby play like that a bit. Malkin was the one creating the physical contact. He was the one who was all over the ice making some plays. Granted, Malkin is playing with players who, again, I will say do not, you know, aren't even close to his skill level. So very many times. And it happens with Crosby too. You know, Guerin has a chance last night, or Kunitz has been terrible. I mean, Chris Kunitz, where has he been all playoffs? Never mind the Stanley Cup final. And Bill Guerin, again, is a little bit overrated in my mind in terms of what he's bringing to the table now. Back in his prime, I thought he was a very good player. So, you know, that is a factor, too, in terms of players not having quality line mates to play with. Even so, though, I still believe that, you know, Malkin's playing at that level without those line mates, really. You know, Fedotenko, Sikora, whatever he's playing with. I just don't, you know.
Probably not Sikora in Game 7.
Sikora's up for Game 7.
For with is it an ankle or a foot?
He broke his ankle or something.
Yeah, he was on crutches, as we heard earlier.
So, you know, no Sikora, but, I mean, they'll plug... Talbot probably back up there again, put Satan on the fourth line. That's fine. I don't think that'll be, you know, again, Satan and Sikora are both players who have seen their better days.
Yeah.
Right, but 5-on-5, I really think that Crosby is being treated a little bit unfairly. The numbers aren't there. But I still think 5-on-5, he's been engaged. He's been flying around there. I mean, he's not. He's been smothered.
One goal, two assists, -3.
And what did he have in the game? What did he have in the series before? I did the numbers on this for Puck Prospectus, is the other set I read for, and I think the numbers were something like he had...
9 points, 10 points?
No. He had, I forget his first three-round numbers were something in the high 20s, and he has 3 points since then. So doesn't he have 31 points or something like that? And he had 28 points in the first whatever? Whatever it is, again, the fact is, I mean, his points per game before last night, I'll tell you this, his points per game over the first three rounds was... 1.64, I believe. And his points per game before last night was 0.6. So he's down over a point a game. Think about that. He's down over a point a game from the first three rounds on. And granted, again, I realize he's not playing against Washington's defense. He's not really playing against Carolina. He's not playing against Carolina's defense. And he's not playing against Philly's defense. We were worried about that before the series, were we not?
The
quality defensemen on those three teams are not that high.
Also, last night was the first game of the Stanley Cup playoffs where neither Malkin or Crosby had a point.
Surprise, and they won.
Well, and let me just shift the story a little bit over to another player who's sort of been AWOL, and this is on the Detroit side of the ice. And our colleague in Detroit, David Minuk, has been firm in his belief that this player is injured, and that's why it accounts for his poor playing. Marian Hossa has been somewhat absent.
Not even somewhat absent. I think he's been totally absent. He got roasted by Ray Ferraro last night on TSN SportsCenter. I'm not sure if people saw, but he basically called him a bystander. Said he hasn't added anything to the table for the Red Wings this year. And to be honest, he was showing some clips, and I've seen Mary Hossa, and I saw him play in person this year, and he was dominant. And I agree with Ferraro in that he has not been anywhere to be seen. And you have to wonder, we're getting ahead of ourselves here in terms of the summer, but you have to wonder if Kenny Holland's not taking note of that and saying, even on a long-term deal, maybe that money's better. With the cap shrinking, maybe we can win without you. We won without you last year. We have players that are improving, like Phil Pula and Hudler and Ville Leino. Do we spend the money on a player that, has had play? Let's be honest here. He's been bad for the playoffs. He's scored 20, only in game fours.
22 games played, 6 goals, 9 assists, 15 points.
Okay, key there though, Drew. Let's add a little asterisk there. Yeah. He has 3 games where he scored goals.
Yeah.
And how many games did you say he's played?
He's played 22.
So 19 games
he's not. And I mean, they have him on the team to be putting the biscuit in the basket, as the euphemism goes.
And before last year, Marian Hossa's playoff track record in Ottawa and Atlanta wasn't good. It was like half point a game.
It's bad.
Yeah.
Last year was his first real solid
breakout.
Was that a product of playing with Sidney Crosby?
Well,
he's playing with skill here, though.
We're giving Crosby, people are giving Crosby grief, but, over the course of the entire playoffs, 23 games played, 31 points, and he's a plus 9.
Drew, he is, I'm telling you, he's the best, my opinion, he's the best player in the National Hockey League. That his standard is raised. He had 28 points before the series. He has 31.
Yeah.
We're six games in.
I agree that he's struggled in this. He has not been lived up to the expectations people had for him. But it's not like he's been, Hossa has been a sort of a secondary player the entire postseason. He's not stepped up and taken Detroit on his shoulders like sort of everyone was expecting him to.
Yeah.
Whereas Crosby, has done his part and has led his team this far.
No, I mean, I agree that Crosby is above and beyond the player of Hossa's, skill level, everything. I mean, Hossa just doesn't, he's a great player. He's very good defensively. He just doesn't do it for me in terms of he's not up there in the top 5. I mean, we're not.
This series has been his worst series.
He's been invisible. I mean, if you're getting roasted on national television by a former hockey player, granted, Ferraro doesn't mince words, and I give him a lot of credit for that. But even so, that's, you obviously didn't bring your A game, because players don't toss around comments like that unless they really mean it.
Hossa's also been a bit of a specialty player, too.
Five of his 15 points have come on the power play.
In games 2 and 5,
Hossa.
He was terrific at distributing the puck to Phil Pula.
Yeah.
And he's looked very good. I think it's more a question of him having a little bit of difficulty in games where Detroit isn't firing on all cylinders, mainly on the road. I mean, they've lost one game in the series at home. And when they're at home and he's a piece of the puzzle and he's, required to score one or two goals on the power play, playing with his line mates, he's doing well. In games where it's more of a low-scoring game, such as in game 3, 4, and 6,
he's been invisible. Do we think that Hossa's injured?
He may be, but isn't everybody injured?
Well, yes, everybody absolutely is injured at this point in the season, that's for sure.
So, I mean, that's the question. Is the injury serious? It probably is. But, I mean, Jeff Carter and Mike Richards are examples of that. I mean, Richards having surgery on both shoulders and Carter also having shoulder surgery, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not trying to make excuses, because at this point in the season, you're absolutely right. Everybody's injured. Nobody's healthy.
Maybe another question is the pressure of playing against his former team really bothering him?
I think we have a call.
Dave, do we have a call?
We sure do. Gary's on line one for you guys. Got a question for you.
All righty. Gary, thanks for joining us. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Very well. What's your question?
Well, I've got a series of questions, but mostly I think you guys are really missing the boat on last night's game. Fleury was good. I got no doubts about that, and so was Osgood. But what the players that won that game were the lesser lights.
Jordan Still.
The third line, the Hustlers, they went all night, and that's why Pittsburgh won, plain and simple.
I think you're right about that insight, and we're going to talk about that with James Myrtle in just a few minutes, especially the role of Jordan Staal.
The Jordan Staal, Tyler Kennedy and Matt Cook line obviously was obviously going up against Zetterberg and Datsyuk last night, and Staal getting that huge goal, and then Kennedy.
And Matt Talbot.
Yeah, Kennedy.
And Talbot, Talbot's ice time was way up yesterday. Talbot's been everywhere, and he's the type of player you need to win a Stanley Cup championship.
He's a monster out there. I mean, if you look at the scoring, isn't he third in the final?
I believe so, but I think isn't that the worry? If you're a Penguins fan,
no, I don't think so.
No, I think
it's a team game.
I agree, but I think that if Pittsburgh, granted there's one game left, but if Pittsburgh is going to go into Detroit and win Game 7, they're not going to. Yesterday's performance by the quote unquote checking line was tremendous, but unless Crosby and Malkin are there on Friday night, I don't see them winning that game.
No, the Game 7s are the time for the superstars to shine. I think that's going to be the key for both teams.
That's a theory.
Yeah,
I'd go along with that's a theory. But hey, if you're going to win, you have to have everybody going, and they have to go every shift.
Gary, I think everyone is going to agree that energy line of Stahl, Cook, and Kennedy was very impressive, and I've been talking about how impressive that line's been the entire playoffs. But I think that the main worry for a lot of spectators, and Richie just touched on this, is that in Detroit, when it's early in the game, when Detroit loves to take over a game and early in the Joe Louis Arena, I think the worry is that if Crosby isn't there and making an impact early, that the Penguins don't have much of a chance, and that third line's not even going to be a factor.
And the matchup factor too. I mean, Bilesma can't get what he wants anymore.
That's right. He doesn't. I think the lack of having the last change, I think, is going to be a big, significant factor in the game tomorrow.
You
night.
Better believe that
Friday night. Sorry.
You better believe that Zetterberg Datsyuk line will be up against Crosby tomorrow.
Yeah.
Friday. Sorry.
Point taken. But if you look at it from the other side. Would you be saying the same thing if Helm was the star and Detroit had wrapped it up last night and Helm had scored a goal and an assist and they'd won 2-1? Would you be saying, oh, geez, you know, Zetterberg and Datsyuk didn't show up? Can't be relying on your fourth line all the time.
Well, I think maybe one game, but I just don't. I'm looking at the whole series. And
I'll put it this way: if they had played in any of the three games that they lost to Detroit, mm-hmm. as well as they played last night. They're hoisting the cup last night, aren't they?
The Stahl line?
No, the whole team.
The whole team. You're saying that if Pittsburgh, that you thought that was Pittsburgh's best performance of the series?
By far. And it was because it was a team game. It wasn't, because Crosby didn't have a goal and three assists and Malkin didn't dominate like he did in other games, doesn't mean that they weren't playing. They were playing, and they were playing hard.
They were playing hard, but let's also be honest. If that was their best game, then they sure hung on tooth and nail 2-1 at home in a game that the other team didn't need to win.
Well, don't you think Detroit's a better team?
I do. But I think that since Bilesma came on board, Pittsburgh is close.
Yeah, okay. But all I'm saying is that, like I said, my question is if they played anywhere near as well as they did last night in Game 1, this series is over last night.
You know what? What I'm thinking is that I don't, as well as Kennedy and Talbot and Stahl can play, if Crosby and Malkin don't get on the score sheet on Friday, I don't think it matters how well the checking line plays.
No, I don't think they're going to win either. I don't think they've got it yet. I think they're still learning and there's still a couple of players away. I agree with you totally that Detroit's a better team. But I'll say this. If they play as well for 60 minutes on Friday as they did last night, they'll win.
And
Detroit's
not used
to being banged around.
And I think your point,
them the whole time.
Your point is well taken, though, as far as being able to win via a team effort. Because when Detroit wins and Zetterberg has 1 point, but Justin Abdelkader or Ville Leino or you mentioned Darren Helm scores a goal, there's not that much factor because of the fact that Detroit has better distributive scoring. So
yeah, they're winning without Datsyuk.
Gary, I'm going to have to let you go. I'll let you get the final word, and let's hear your prediction for Friday night's game. And we're going to have to go to break real quick. We got James Myrtle coming up right away.
You
so let's hear your prediction, and then we'll have to leave it there.
Okay, heart prediction, Pittsburgh. Head prediction, Detroit.
All righty, Gary. Thanks for the
guys.
Call.
Bye now.
Take care. Shortly before 7:20 on the IllegalCurve.com radio show, we're going to go to break. When we come back from the Globe and Mail, James Myrtle. This is the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
I hear you're planning on taking engineering in the fall. U of M, right?
No, actually, I'm going to Red River College. They have a 2.5-year mechanical engineering technology program. It's very well respected by industry, and the graduates always get good jobs.
Really? Only 2.5 years?
Yeah, and the summer terms are spent in a co-op where you go to work in your chosen field and gain valuable experience.
That sounds great. What's the program all about?
You learn a lot of engineering theory, of course, but there are also lots of hands-on labs and modern high-tech equipment that you get to use. It's a gearhead's paradise.
Is it hard to get in? I hear some programs have waiting lists.
No, there are spaces still available for the August 31st entry. You're strong in math and physics, right?
Yeah, I got top marks in both in high school. And you know me, I've got to know how everything works. Where can I find out more?
Well, Red River College has a great website. Look up Mechanical Engineering Technology. There is also contact information there if you want to speak to someone. Mechanical Engineering Technology is a great start to a bright future.
Deep breath. Oh dear.
What, doctor?
It's your heart. The beats, they're fat.
Is it serious?
Have you been hanging out at Aluminum Sound?
Yeah, but only on weekends or with friends.
Listen, I understand the temptation of Aluminum Sound's huge selection of UCDs, but I think you've contracted the funk.
The funk? Oh my God, is it serious?
Super serious, man. I'm afraid it may be too late to get the funk out.
Doctor, I'm only 22.
I keep telling you, kids, you can't mess around with Aluminum Sound.
Aluminum Sound, Vaughn Street and Graham Avenue. Killer tunes.
Winnipeg rocks on with the new CD from the Perms. Keeps you up when you're down.
You mean the world to me.
Featuring 12 new killer tracks, including Big Mistake, Night Shift, The Mess, and Give Me All Your Lovin'. The only CD on the market today that does what its title claims. Keeps you up when you're down. The new release from Winnipeg's own, The Perms. Keeps You Up When You're Down is on sale now at all CD Plus locations, Into the Music, Music Trader, and on iTunes. Follow the news about the Perms and check out their gig list at www.theperms.com. Keeps You Up When You're Down, the new release from the Perms. You gotta get this.
Welcome back to the IllegalCurve.com radio show. We are thrilled to be joined on the line now by James Myrtle from the Globe and Mail and FromTheRink.com. James, I'm joined in studio by my good friends Richard and Ezra. Thanks for joining us on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
Hey guys, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. James, you wrote today that Dan Bylsma outcoached Mike Babcock in Game 6 by matching Jordan Staal up against the Wings' big guns. How do you think Babcock will adjust to Bylsma's change in strategy for Game 7?
Well, it's going to be pretty interesting in Game 7 because Babcock's all of a sudden going to get the last change back again, and he used that to great effect in the games that were in Detroit, and that's part of the reason that that Pittsburgh really struggled, I think, is that Babcock was able to get Zetterberg out there against Crosby every single time. And Sidney Crosby has struggled in this series. You know, he hasn't produced the way that Pittsburgh really needs him to, so I think that's probably the way it's going to change the matchup. Now, if Dan Bylsma still wants to get Jordan Staal out there against Zetterberg, it's going to be kind of interesting in trying to do that sort of on the fly because he's not going to be able to have last change and do that before every face-off.
James, who do you think has been a bigger disappointment, Hossa or Crosby?
Probably Marian Hossa, who I haven't even really noticed at all in this series. And it's not even like Hossa is getting the big checker on him or anything like that. Like Crosby's been noticeable, but he's been noticeable sort of for always battling against a guy like Zetterberg and not being able to break through that checking. So he's been noticeable, but there have been games where you know you don't even notice Hossa, and when you do, like the last game, when you do notice him, it's because of a turnover or a boneheaded pass or something like that. He hasn't been very good at all.
James, do you think that the Hossa's lack of production is going to be a factor at all in Ken Holland's thinking moving into the summer?
Yeah, I think so. I think it has to. Just because the contract that Hossa would command as an unrestricted free agent is going to be quite large, and that'll be tough for Detroit to bring in. And if they do sign Hossa, it's sort of going to limit what they can do going forward and what other pieces of this team that they can keep.
I guess talking about the Conn Smythe, I wanted to ask you, but you wrote an article about that on From the Rink, and I don't think Hossa's in those talks. But I'm going to ask you on both sides, who's going to be your pick if Pittsburgh wins, and who would be your pick if Detroit were to win?
Man, that's a tough question. Have you guys been debating this one?
We have been.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, maybe you can help me out. Yeah, it's tough. You know, everyone that I've talked to in the media thinks that Chris Osgood's going to win. And I'm guessing that would only happen if Detroit wins. But, you know, it's interesting, though. You look at it, and Osgood's stats aren't as good as last year when they won. And he didn't win last year. I think if Detroit wins, I would give it to Henrik Zetterberg.
So would I.
And if Pittsburgh wins, it might actually depend what happens on Friday. It might, it's tough. It'd be the easy choice, and probably the one that I think that the voters would pick would be Evgeny Malkin, just because of how many points he's put up. But if you look at it, he hasn't had the tough checking assignments all the way through. Crosby's been getting them all, and he does have more points than Crosby, but he's gotten most of them on the power play. And he's been on the ice for a lot more goals against than Crosby has. So I think those are all factors in why I would take Crosby over Malkin.
Moving a little bit further south and a little bit away from the Cup Finals to Phoenix.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, unfortunately. It's sort of been back and forth like this all playoffs long. We talk about the Cup Finals and we talk about the playoffs and then we talk about Phoenix. Being in Southern Ontario, can you give us a little bit of insight into, the sentiment of what's going on? What's the public opinion like in Southern Ontario regarding... I call it the farce in Phoenix, but you can put it in your own name there.
Yeah, no, that's a good name for it. It's nuts here. I mean, you guys are in Winnipeg, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can imagine. I mean, imagine if there was a story like this, and it was a billionaire in Winnipeg. It was going about the same thing. I mean, it would be. It's incredible. We're working at the Globe. I keep thinking that today we won't have a Coyote story. Yeah. Nothing's going on, but we always do every day. Lots of times we have two. We've had reporters there almost the entire time. And the Globe has basically been reporting on this for 7, 8, 9 months. It was David Schultz had a source with the governors that was telling him that all this stuff was going on when no one really knew any. There was this big problem in Phoenix. But in terms of fan interest and stuff like that, there's a lot. And I haven't got the sense that the Cup Final has really grabbed a lot of people and that, the ratings are down on Hockey Night in Canada and... I think people are more interested in this Coyotes business here, and especially in Hamilton. I mean, that's all they're talking about in Hamilton. They're more interested in that than the hockey, which is incredible.
Yeah, James, I have a question. I keep hearing about how if a team gets moved into Hamilton, it's going to take away from the Sabres draw. Are there, with the exception of Leafs games, are there that many fans from Southern Ontario going down to watch a regular season Sabres game against the Thrashers?
There are quite a few. Yeah, it's something like 10% of the people going to Sabres games on average are Canadian. I personally think a lot of those are coming from Niagara Falls and that region. So, not from Toronto, not from Hamilton. And the thing about having a team in Hamilton is that they would draw a ton of people from Toronto and from Mississauga and Oakville and stuff like that.
Sure.
And you can't go to a... I mean, you can. I've been to a bunch of Buffalo games, but it's sort of like an all-day event if you go from downtown Toronto to Buffalo. I mean, it takes people do it. People do because you can't go to games here, so you'll drive 2 hours to Buffalo, watch the game, and drive back. But that's a long, long day. So they're not drawing Toronto fans. They're not drawing Mississauga. They might get some people from Hamilton, but even that, that's a hike. That's like an hour or whatever to Buffalo. So Buffalo does have a lot of Canadian fans, but. I think it would hurt them a little bit, but not enough that should be the reason they don't do it.
Okay. James, are you surprised by the media success of Jim Balsillie's Make It Seven campaign?
Well, I think a lot of people are making a lot out of that, but he could not even have the campaign, and everyone would be going crazy. And there would probably be a Facebook group Make It Seven or whatever if it wasn't initiated by him. People here are just really interested in that, and they love NHL hockey, and they want to feel like they're sort of included in what's going on. And there's so many people that can't go to Leafs games. You guys are sort of in. I don't know. Do you consider yourself in Western Canada? I know because like my
Central
family,
Canada.
Okay. You're in Central Canada. So my friends and my family back home in BC are in Western Canada, and they think this is goofy. This is people in Toronto saying that. They couldn't support another team, but now living here, I lived here 6 years now, Toronto can support another team so easily. And Hamilton could do really well with the team just because it's close to Toronto. There's so many people that can't go to games. Like, even someone like me, if I wanted to go with some of my buddies, I can't go to a Leafs game. It's impossible.
Sure.
And that's part of the reason, you know, I'm driving to Detroit to watch a game, or last year I went to Columbus. And I mean, that's the way you can go and watch NHL hockey as a fan around here, because you can't at the ACC.
Well, to me, as a, you know, I'm all in favor of hockey coming back to Canada, because this is where really primarily it belongs. But I find that the Make It Seven campaign is a little bit disingenuous, in that Belcilli doesn't really want to make it seven in Canada. He wants to make it seven in Hamilton. You know, so by gathering all this supposedly cross-Canada support, I think he's... I mean, if the NHL comes back to him and says, you know, you have to do, we'll give you their seventh Canada, their seventh team in Winnipeg or in Saskatoon or in Thunder Bay, how can he all of a sudden back away from wrapping himself in the Canadian flag?
Because the team in Hamilton would be so much more successful and be worth so much more money than any of those other teams. It would just do so much better. And plus, he lives here too. I mean, it's really a no-brainer having another team here. It would do so well.
I agree. I just find it a little bit, just to me as a Canadian who's not in you know, the GTA, I find it a little bit disingenuous that he's wrapping himself in the Canadian flag for this whole campaign.
Well, I think part of that stems from the fact that the NHL has been an American league, a heavily American league, and pursued American fans and things like that for so long that there's a lot of anti-NHL, anti-American sentiment tied into this, and he's tapping into that. He's just trying to stimulate a big PR campaign and make the NHL look bad, basically. And I see what you're saying, and you're right, but there are people, you know, across Canada that are interested in this happening just because they want more Canadian teams.
Yeah, I mean, I think Belcilli has done a terrific job marketing. I mean, obviously, he's a smart businessman. He's done a terrific job marketing. James, I wanted to move a little bit more towards the actual, you know, the hearings and the trial itself. What do you figure? I mean, you spoke about it a bit today on From the Rink. What do you figure the NHL is going to come back with, you know, ballpark range to judge Baum with for a total for a relocation fee?
I don't know. That's a great question. I'm really interested to see what it is, but if I was the NHL, I would come back with a huge number. I mean, why not? I would say $200 million or even north of that, and then it'll be up to the judge to say that's not realistic. I mean, they're gonna, if it's up to the NHL to start with the number, they'll go high. They'll go really, really high, because the other governors, if this is going to happen, they're going to want to see something, some benefit from it, because, you know, really what should have happened is they should have expanded into that market and sold it to the highest bidder years ago and made the money then. And since they didn't do that, this might be the only way they can go if they do have to move into that market this way.
I mean, I think the results of this trial, you know, the results of everything that's been going on have surprised me. And I think you spoke about today, it surprised you also. Do you see, I mean, I personally didn't think that there's much of a chance Balsillo is going to, you know, be successful in this all the shenanigans. But if you had to put it on, you know, a percent chance that this is going to go through now on Balsillo's side, what would you put it at?
Oh, it's probably not very high still. It's tough to say. I mean, I'm not a legal expert, but I still get the sense that it's, you know, there's any number of things that could come up along the way. And even just the timing of the whole thing, because Balsillo wants this to happen really fast, and I don't know that the courts are going to work that fast. I would say, you know, it's like 10-15% chance that this might happen. And so it's not very high, but that could change as we go along here. The big thing that the NHL needs is they need some bidders to stand up and say, we want to own this team in Phoenix.
Well, bidders in quotations.
Yeah.
Well, no, but they actually need an actual bidder with a bid to come in. And because the judge said, you know, these phony bidders, these expressions of interest don't mean anything. I mean, the judge had no interest in looking at that at all. And he said, if there's someone who wants to pay money for this team where it is and what it is, then let's get them out. And if not, then we're dealing with this relocation issue and we're looking at that. So if no one steps up and wants to own the team in Phoenix, and no one wants to make any kind of a bid, even if it's $3, there's nothing to look at, right? I mean, there's only one place they can go, and that's somewhere else.
And that's been the biggest problem. I mean, having looked at the numbers and seen some of the numbers on the net, I mean, this team is a money-losing proposition, and in this economy, why would anybody want to buy into that? And even, especially with the arena deal that they have, and now suddenly, I think that's the biggest thing is in terms of the concessions that Phoenix is trying to make now. They've come way too late with those concessions. And so, I mean, I don't know if you buy it, James, but I don't buy that the Argos owners have any possible, you know, would possibly want to buy them, and if they would want to buy them, they wouldn't keep them in Phoenix.
Yeah. Well, that'd be a pretty interesting scenario. I think what Bettman would be trying to do there is give these guys the team in Phoenix until, you know, the economy rebounds and he can find someone else to take over that team, or the team stops losing that much money and does better on the ice or something. I mean, he's just trying to delay moving out of that market. I think the NHL looks at Phoenix as an important market because it's such a big city and it's a big TV market, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's part of the reason they're really reluctant to leave there.
A big TV market that gets 7,000 homes to watch their, each Coyotes game.
Yeah, well, it's like I said, I think I wrote that yesterday, that if you add up how many households watch the Coyotes games all season, it's about 280,000. And, you know, a typical Leafs game here in Toronto gets more than that, like one game.
Wow.
So, you know, that's exactly right.
We're joined on the IllegalCurve.com radio show by James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail and from TheRink.com. James, moving a little bit east of Toronto to Ottawa, Danny Heatley was in the headlines yesterday demanding a trade or requesting a trade. What's your take on what the market will be like for Heatley?
That's a good question. I think, unfortunately for him, there's going to be a lot of teams that are sort of out of the running just because his salary is so high. I think he makes $7.5 million a year for the next 4 years. Mm-hmm. That's steep for a lot of teams. So, you know, right there you're going to get at least half the league's not going to be involved. But I do think that there are a lot of teams that need that sniper, and, you know, it's a trade. It's not a free agency deal. So it's not as though the player has to say, oh, I really want to go to X and I'm going to sign a contract there. He might just get traded to wherever they send him. And that might work in favor of a team that's had trouble signing a player. And the team that comes to mind for me is Minnesota. And I think Minnesota, they're going to lose Gavrik. They've got a new GM there. They really need to some scoring, and they're going to play a different style next season, which is going to be interesting. And I think Heatley would be a great fit in Minnesota. Now, I don't know what they would give up or what Ottawa gets back for that, but if I had to guess, it would be something like that. It would be a Minnesota or a St. Louis or a team that has cap space and has some assets they can give up for him.
James, what's your opinion on hockey players demanding trades, you know, soon after signing new contracts?
Yeah. I'm really surprised that this one came out in the open like this. Yeah. Healy's agent was on the radio today talking about it, and that's not really very common. You know, I don't get the sense that Heatley wanted this to be public, but here it is, and it's not making him look very good because it's the second time this has happened that he's requested to be traded.
Right.
Go ahead, James.
My opinion, generally, it's a bad thing, and it's a bad thing for a player to do. You know, like you said, especially after they sign a contract. I don't think it's a guarantee that Heatley's going to be gone. I think they're going to try and patch things up and figure it out. But apparently he has a disagreement with the head coach, and that's one of the big reasons there that it's happening. It could be a real black mark on him, and it could be a reason that some teams don't want him. And I've read fans and bloggers talking about this today saying, you know, we don't want this guy. He doesn't want to stay in one place for very long, so why do you want him? Well, they question his commitment, basically.
You know, I lived in Ottawa for a couple of years, and I mean, the extenuating circumstances of, we all know about, you know, when Heatley wanted out of Atlanta, so that, you know, there's sort of a little bit of an asterisk there. But of all the sends, I mean, and that was team dysfunction for a long time, I'm surprised that it was Heatley that was out. I was expecting Spezza to be on the way out.
Yeah, well, I think, and I'm just speculating because I haven't talked to anyone involved, I think that maybe Heatley looked at this team and the way it's made up, and there are some bad apples there, and there's been a lot of problems, and maybe Heatley said, I don't really want to be a part of this anymore. We're not. This isn't a good team. This isn't a good environment for me, so maybe I should get out of here. And I think that would have been fine. You know, I think a lot of players and agents request trades that we never, ever hear about, and a trade happens, and it's never known that the player initiated that. So I think if that would have happened in this situation, it would have been a lot better for Heatley, because all of a sudden it's not public that he wants out.
James, I'll leave you on this last question. You know, you're from TheRink.com, is associated with SB Nation, and you're sort of the driving force on the hockey blogs there. Can you talk about the progress that you've been made on the SB Nation front since you came aboard?
Well, we have a blog for every team now, so I think that's pretty incredible. I came on the network in October, and I think we had five blogs or something like that. I mean, they had built up their baseball and their football blogs pretty well. They had those leagues well represented. And they asked me to come on, and they said, we really want to have lots of blogs and them to and to do well. And I thought, oh, geez, I mean, how am I going to do this? How am I going to find a Florida Panthers blog and a, a Phoenix Coyotes blog and stuff like that? Because, for a long time, those things didn't even exist. The hockey blog sphere is pretty new, and it's pretty small. I mean, you guys would know all the sites and everything, but I've been around for a couple for about 4 years, I think, blogging, and it's only recently, it's only like in the last year that there have been blogs for every team, which is rare, because in baseball and football and stuff like that, there's been huge blogs around for most of the teams for a long time. So it was a real challenge putting it together, but I think it's worked out pretty well. And the guys who are running the business side of what SB Nation is trying to do, they're doing a really nice job. They're they've got partnerships with Yahoo Sports and CBS Sportsline and some of the other big sites, NHL.com, and what they're really trying to do is just promote bloggers' work a lot more. And I think it's going to benefit the hockey blogosphere as a whole, because there's more traffic coming in, and there's more sort of mainstream traffic coming into the blogs and reading them. You look at the traffic on some of our sites, like the Red Wings blog or the Penguins blog we have, and it's gone up exponentially in the last couple months. And it's great to see. It's great to see that bloggers are doing better, and hopefully it's something that they can monetize better, and then bloggers all make some money for doing this.
James Myrtle of the Globe and Mail and from therink.com, thanks very much for joining us on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
Yeah, glad to be here, guys.
All right, thanks, take care, James.
Yeah.
7:40, let's go to break. When we come back, Kelly Rudy of Hockey Night in Canada. You're listening to the IllegalCurve.com radio show live on 92.9 KICK FM.
Fuel all of your musical desires at Into the Music, with everything from hot new releases to legendary underground classics. Bring your previously loved CDs or LPs to Into the Music and turn them into trade or cash and fire your passions, whatever they may be. Into the Music, 245 McDermott in the Exchange District, fulfilling Winnipeg's musical yearning since 1987.
I hear you're planning on taking engineering in the fall. U of M, right?
No, actually, I'm going to Red River College. They have a 2.5-year mechanical engineering technology program. It's very well respected by industry, and the graduates always get good jobs.
Really? Only 2.5 years?
Yeah, and the summer terms are spent in a co-op where you go to work in your chosen field and gain valuable experience.
That sounds great. What's the program all about?
You learn a lot of engineering theory, of course, but there are also lots of hands-on labs and modern high-tech equipment that you get to use. It's a gearhead's paradise.
Is it hard to get in? I hear some programs have waiting lists.
No, there are spaces still available for the August 31st entry. You're strong in math and physics, right?
Yeah, I got top marks in both in high school. And you know me, I've got to know how everything works. Where can I find out more?
Well, Red River College has a great website. Look up Mechanical Engineering Technology. There is also contact information there if you want to speak to someone. Mechanical Engineering Technology is a great start to a bright future.
Did you know that Half Pints Brewing Company is the only brewery in Winnipeg that is locally owned? David and Nicole Rudge, who are the passionate owners, were both born and raised in Winnipeg, and now they're raising their own family here. So what does that mean to you? It means that Half Pints makes a point of using as many local suppliers as possible, as they understand that a healthy economy starts right here at home. With that said, don't buy Half Pints just because it's local. Buy it because it's better. Look for the new St. James Pale, exclusively on draft at your favorite watering hole. Half Pints Brewing Company. Think local, drink local.
Shortly before quarter to eight, we're back on the IllegalCurve.com radio show on 92.9 KICK FM. We are now pleased to be joined by Kelly Rudy of Hockey Night in Canada, a longtime NHL goaltender. Kelly, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks.
Kelly, you've been there for Game 7s before. You've been there in the pressure-packed situations. Take us inside the dressing rooms for both the teams right now. What are the players doing to keep their nerves calm? What's the attitude? What's the feeling? Take us inside the dressing room, if you will.
Well, you know what? It's actually right now it's pretty darn calm, and it's a pretty exciting time because, as you can imagine, this is what all kids grow up dreaming about, having a chance to be in a Game 7, in particular in the Stanley Cup Final. So the emotions right now are at an all-time high. You're feeling really good about yourself. Both teams believe that they're going to be the victors on Friday night. So at this point, they don't even have any nerves. Nerves will start just a little bit before the seventh game. But once you get to this point in a game seven, it just seems as though, for whatever reason, game seven's become pretty easy to play in that sense. You really do think optimistically, and so for that reason, I don't think we're going to see a lot of bad plays through nerves.
Kelly, being a former goaltender, how would you rate Marc-Andre Fleury and Chris Osgood in this series?
Boy, I'd say really, really good. I'd say that other than the one game that Fleury wasn't great, although he didn't have a lot of help, these two guys have been everything that you ask for from a Stanley Cup champion. So making different names for themselves. Osgood, after a pretty ordinary regular season, proving again that he's a top-notch goaltender, and for him to, if he can be the winner on Friday, to win four Stanley Cups would put him in a very select group, Hall of Fame category, in my opinion. And Fleury is a guy that's really trying to make a name for himself and put himself on the radar and be one of those guys that at least would be taken to the orientation camp heading into the Canadian Olympic team for 2010.
Kelly, I want to get your take on Sidney Crosby's production or lack thereof. Has that surprised you so far in the finals?
There have been stretches where he's been really, really good. Production is something that I think that we sometimes get seduced by, mm-hmm. and we look at stats and we say, boy, this guy, you know, his numbers are a little bit down. What's the reason? What's wrong? And those sorts of things. But players like Crosby, they're so dynamic that at any given moment they can just absolutely explode. And to a certain degree, he's just being overshadowed by another great player on his team, Malkin. Malkin, in my opinion, has been the best player in the series. He's just been absolutely great offensively, defensively. I think you guys probably saw the play late in the third period last night where he tracked down Datsyuk from behind and stripped him of the puck and then took the puck up ice. So, you know, it's just a series that's littered with incredible hockey players, and it's just so intoxicating to watch these guys and see their skill level.
Kelly, what do you think the keys are for each team heading into tomorrow's Game 7? What does Pittsburgh have to do to win? Sorry, Friday's Game 7. What does Pittsburgh have to do to win? What does Detroit have to do to win?
Well, I think that for Pittsburgh, when they have a lot of success, they get the puck from their defense to their forwards quickly. And when they struggle, they don't do that very well. And then secondly, when they have the puck, get it down low and be patient, because as you guys know, it's such a grind at this point in the season anyways. And if you have big guys back there and or quick guys that can dart in and out, it's so difficult to contain them defensively. And for Detroit, I think just continue to stay on the attack. They are such a talented and deep team. I'm just so impressed with, you look at their six defensemen in the game, and I don't think there's anybody even in the league that's close to that, having six guys like that. You look at a guy like whether Lebda's your fifth or sixth, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You look at him, then you look at other teams around the league, and you go, let's compare that Lebda to my fifth or sixth guy. And not many teams can do it. He's a highly skilled guy. He skates really well, moves the puck, has a good shot. So I just think for Detroit, one thing that they never get is rattled. And so if I'm going into that game with them, just, boys, let's just play the same way. And over time, our skill has to win over hard work, just because they do both so well.
Now, Kelly, Wayne Gretzky was a teammate of yours in Los Angeles. How would you compare Sidney Crosby's mannerisms and his leadership skills with those of Gretzky?
I'd say that's a very good comparison. They're both very humble people, very people that handle themselves with grace and really loved by their teammates. I know I learned just a million things from Gretzky, being around him for almost about eight seasons, and I see a lot of those same comparisons and similarities in Crosby. He's not one of the guys that's super boastful. He doesn't want to take the attention away from his teammates. If somebody deserves a compliment, he's the first one to speak highly of them. So I think that's a very, very accurate comparison, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's loved so much.
Kelly, aside from the superstars like the Zetterbergs and Crosbys and Malkins, what one player has really pleasantly surprised you so far in the finals?
Oh, boy, there's so many. I don't even know if I can just nail it down to one or two, but if I had to really pick a couple guys that I think really fly under the radar on both teams. I'd pick Scuderi and Orpik for the Penguins. Different kinds of players, but real gritty and willing to do anything. And for Detroit, I'm going to say that Filppula is a guy that I personally believe is going to be an absolute star. He's great offensively, defensively. Stewart wouldn't be under the radar because we've known for years that he's a really, really tough, gritty guy, hard guy to play against. And Erickson, though, I think is the guy that may really explode on the scene in the next couple of years. He's not a real young guy. He's 25 already, but he shows so much poise, and he's not really well known yet, but I think he continues to grow. He's just going to be an amazing hockey player.
We're joined on the IllegalCurve.com radio show by Kelly Rudy of Hockey Night in Canada. Kelly, moving away from the finals for a minute or two, we've had an ongoing debate in studio about the Canadian Olympic goaltending situation. We had Darren Elliott on a couple weeks ago, and he said that he didn't even have Roberto Luongo making the Canadian Olympic team. What are your thoughts on goaltending for Vancouver 2010?
Well, it's always up in the air. I mean, there'd be a lot of guys in their sights, and I think that what's important is that probably don't rush to judgment just yet, because we still have to see how everybody's going to play when the season starts next year and then have a better feel for picking those guys. In my opinion, Roberto Luongo clearly is on that radar, and I would be incredibly surprised if he wasn't on the team. He's a fantastic goaltender. He steals games for his team. He knows how to win big games. We saw that in the last World Cup when Marty Brodeur was injured, and it was up to Luongo to go in there and fill in, and he was just spectacular. I thought he won the game because I thought they're all played in that one, so he can handle pressure. After that, I don't know. I think Fleury, again, should consider some sort of attention, at least to the orientation camp that they'll have in Calgary, and they're probably about five or six other guys that I can really see having a chance.
Kelly, we know that you have to go right away. We have one final question for you. Would you be able to please give us a prediction for tomorrow night's? We keep saying tomorrow night. Expecting
we're
there
excited.
To be hockey.
We're anticipating.
There's not always hockey. Would you be able to give us a prediction for Friday night's all important Game 7?
Well, this has been a pretty pleasant interview until that one. Now, you know what? Just because I have all series, I'm really leaning towards Detroit. It wouldn't surprise me if Pittsburgh had a great game and were able to win, but I'm just so impressed with Detroit and their depth. I just don't see a team in the league that has depth like that. You match that with willpower, work ethic, and all the intangibles, like they know how to win and those sorts of things, and so I'm leaning towards them.
Kelly Rudy, Hockey Night in Canada, thanks very much for joining us on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. We'll let you get back to your busy schedule. Appreciate you taking the time out to talk to us tonight.
Thanks, boys, and I'll talk to you soon.
All righty, take care, Kelly.
Thanks a lot, Kelly.
As I mentioned, that was Kelly Rudy of Hockey Night in Canada predicting Detroit to win Game 7 on Friday.
You could tell by his tone that he thinks Detroit is going to take it before, you know, saying his prediction. He's obviously very impressed with the depth that they have. And the,
On paper, they are better than Pittsburgh.
Well, on paper, they're better than everybody.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's a, I think, a real testament to Pittsburgh that they've even come this far.
Yeah.
And, I mean, lots of people, including people in the studio, said Pittsburgh in 6.
I had Pittsburgh in 7.
I know you had Pittsburgh in 7.
But still alive.
Very much
not that
still
it matters,
alive.
But you know what? Yeah. I really think that he's so impressed with, and I'm impressed with too, it's just their puck possession. It's like they're playing keep away on the ice. And it just impresses me so much how they're able to hold the puck away from the opponent and their body control and their ability to support players. And it's the one thing about the Red Wings that people do talk about it, but they always have two guys on the puck. Like, they're always supporting the puck. And that's one of the biggest keys in hockey is not allowing, not forcing passes through the neutral zone and in the offensive zone. You're always having somebody close by, and then you control the puck like that.
Well, if you have puck support, you're going to have puck possession.
Right.
And so it stands to reason.
And that's a testament to the skill level of the players, but also to Mike Babcock and his coaching staff, the way they teach the team to play. I mean, these guys, they dump it in when they have to. They hold the puck when they have to. They always seem to do the right play and make the right move. And it's Dan Bylsma has done a terrific job coaching the Pens on the other side, too.
Well, you gotta give a lot of credit to Dan Bylsma, because when he came aboard earlier this year, Pittsburgh was floundering. They really were.
Right. Now, I'll say this. he came in at a perfect time. If people realize he came in right after Sergei Gonchar came back.
Yeah.
And but as people have noted on the show, I believe Darren Elliott and a number of others, the change in style that he put into plays, you know, as you can speak to this, the forechecking aggressive style as opposed to sitting back with so much talent, what is the difference in the way that this team has taken off?
I think if you're a head coach in the NHL, you have to be flexible in your styles.
Well, many coaches aren't, Drew.
I know they're not, and I don't understand it because, you know, you have to be able to adapt. And there's so very many coaches that just refuse to adapt.
Do you remember Craig McTavish did a perfect job of adapting in the 2006 playoffs when the Oilers were more of a go-go-go team, as generally the Oilers are, and or had been. And
this isn't the 1980s and Jari Kurri and Gretzky right. and Messier aren't
but
playing on the same
line. If you remember, he played Detroit in the first round that year, I believe, and he just trapped the heck out of the Red Wings. And he changed the style of play basically for that series. And it worked perfectly, and it's a testament to McTavish's flexibility. Will coaches be flexible enough to change to the players that they have, or will they demand different players, you know, a la Mike Keenan, to play their style? And I think Mike Babcock, who's Anaheim Ducks team, Anaheim Mighty Ducks back then, played a very aggressive kind of trapping for, you know, sit back, make sure. Remember that Anaheim Devil series? You could fall asleep during that finals.
It was terrible.
But that, you know, he coached what he had now. On the other hand, in Detroit, he's coaching a completely different style, and that is very good. That reflects very well on Mike Babcock as a head coach, which is why I believe, and I think everybody in here is unanimous in that, believing that he should be the Team Canada head coach in 2010.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I think he's got the job. I mean,
he got the job. Yeah,
with the guys who are or running the Team Canada in 2010. I mean, Steve Yzerman's not going to pick a different head coach.
Stevie Y.
As he shouldn't.
Oh, of course he shouldn't, because Mike Babcock's by far the best candidate for the job right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you know, we heard it from Myrtle, and we heard it from Kelly Rudy that, you know, Crosby might be, you know, it's just game sevens are always the time, I think, for the superstars to shine.
Well, this is it. Would you guys not all agree? Crosby can make amends for these poor six games so far if he has an amazing game seven. Nobody will ever remember that he was poor for the first six games if he plays an amazing game seven.
Crosby pots a couple goals on Friday night. He's the Conn Smythe winner.
Yeah.
I still don't think Crosby's been that bad, especially in game four.
I'm not saying he's been bad. It's his standard I hold him to, and the level of play is so high that I really can't. I hold him to that standard at all times, no matter who he's playing. And I believe that he needs to be at least a point a game against Detroit.
You know, there were obviously skillful players that matched up against Gretzky in his day and age.
You know, much was made about Guy Carbonneau shutting down Gretzky in 1993. We're dating ourselves here, but let's look at two things. First of all, the fact that team had lacked the skill and the players such as Malkin that this team has.
Yeah.
Second of all, the fact that
you're saying the secondary is scoring.
Right, and exactly. And yeah. Second of all, I mean, that team, again, was an illegal curve away from probably winning the cup. So,
yeah, you know,
and third of all, probably most importantly, Gretzky was over 30 and past his prime.
That's right. Gretzky was not,
and he was amazing on that run.
1980s Gretzky, anymore.
Right? And so this is 90s, you know, late 2000. This is late 2000s Crosby is the time of early 80s Gretzky, the same prime. So
this is 1987 for.
So that's what
Crosby.
I mean. I mean, those are three different factors I believe that play into that. You know, if you get shut down, the top player getting shut down, it's okay, to a point. He hasn't won any before.
At some point, he has to shake off the Henrik Zetterberg,
right?
And he's got to score.
Well, I think we're all in agreement here that if Crosby and Malkin don't show up, they're not going to win. So you know what that means? That means can the Pittsburgh coaching staff find a way to wake him up or get the most out of some of these other guys that are contributing right now, like Jordan Staal.
If Max
Talbot is going to be who you're going to turn to in the third period, if it's a tight game, which if Crosby and Malkin don't show up in the first period, I reiterate what I just said. I don't think they have a chance. And this is a cliche. It's pretty obvious. Pittsburgh has to show up early in that game with energy, and they have to get an early goal. Maybe not necessarily an early goal, but at least be in the game because Detroit is going to shut it down early.
I wonder if now is the time that Bausma says Malkin Crosby.
He calls them up and says, you guys are the superstars. It's time.
No, not only that, put them on the same line and says, stop these guys. I don't think he'll do it for the entire game, but I think you're going to see parts of that game. And you've seen it before.
You can play the first 10 minutes with them together.
You don't know. I mean, what if they just can't stop them?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, if it comes out to the first 10, yeah. I like it. You have nothing to lose.
Huh. Just the cup final.
Well, I mean, you have... Okay, you know what I'm saying, but there's no tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's
you know what's happened when they haven't been on the same line.
Right.
We have 6 games of empirical evidence.
They both don't have the players playing with them to capitalize on the chances that they're creating. So the question is, do you load up, and then do you have the stall line play itself, and then the other line kind of put a bunch of guys together and just work hard?
So you'd have to move Guerin off that line and leave Kunitz on that line.
Or keep Guerin because you want a right-handed shot and put Kunitz on to line with somebody else.
Food for thought. I like it. I mean, I got to tell you, there's nothing about that doesn't appeal to me.
I think it's something that he might try early too, because then you know, again, and people haven't talked a lot about this. Brian Rafalski has been getting abused on the opposite side of Nicholas Lidstrom.
Everybody's walking around him.
So I mean, if you have, you know, are they gonna? They're gonna suck and suddenly break up Cronwall and Stewart. So do you have Cronwall and Stewart up against? A stall line? And then you have Lidstrom and probably Rafalski getting abused on this that side with Malkin or Crosby.
Let me just make this final point before we go to break quickly. I think if Bylsma does elect to put Crosby and Malkin together on the same line, I think he has to do it early in the game before it reeks of a desperation move.
I agree.
8 o'clock on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. Let's go to break. When we come back, an hour of open phone lines. Let's talk about all things hockey. You're listening to the IllegalCurve.com radio show live on 92.9 KICK FM.
Smarty Pants Belly Dance.
Belly Dance
presents their 5th annual Belly Dance recital, Racks into Summer. Come see a fabulous student show representing Winnipeg's best in belly dance, showcasing the creative works of Nicola, Shaira, Zenobia, and Zaina Dilshad, featuring performances by Spice Road Belly Dance. A mesmerizing visual delight for the whole family. Racks into Summer Belly Dance Recital, Sunday, June 14th at 3 p.m. at the Prairie Theater Exchange. Tickets just $15 at the door or $12 in advance. Available at Osette Belly Dance Emporium at 1045 St. James Street. Call 775-0397. Mothers, daughters, sisters, and friends expressing their joy through the ancient art of belly dance. June 14th at Prairie Theater Exchange. Call 775-0397. Come celebrate women in dance.
Funky, fashionable, or just plain understated? If you're looking for the best in eyewear, look no further than the Focal Point Optician on the University of Manitoba campus. Great looking frames at great prices, great contact lenses too, eye exams available on site, and an experienced staff focused on making sure your eyewear needs are taken care of. That's the Focal Point way. Make your way to 121 University Center Building at the U of M or call 474-7090.
You're behind the wheel. Feeling the power. You think it's all in your hands. Pushing the limit. Owning the road. But in a split second, the unexpected, and you lose control. You think nothing can stop you? You're wrong. Slow down. A message from Manitoba Public Insurance.
Take me tonight, I'm an easy lover.
Shortly after the top of the hour, we're back on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. I am Drew Mandel, joined in studio as usual by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. And for the next hour, we are going to talk about all things hockey. In addition to the Game 7 coming up on Friday, there are big happenings with coaches in Dallas, in Calgary, in New Jersey. There's potential trades coming out of Ottawa. There's a situation in Phoenix, and there's the AHL Calder Cup Finals back in Winnipeg. So if you want to chime in, that was your time. 780-KICK, 780-5425 is the phone number to reach us. If you are calling from long distance, put a 204 in front of that and make it 204-780-5425 or via email at drew@illegalcurve.com. Richard, the start in Dallas today where Joe Nieuwendyk made his first move as the new Stars general manager, firing Dave Tippett. Your thoughts on the move? All indications are Mark Crawford's going to be hired. Your thoughts on that?
First of all, Drew, I was a little bit surprised that... Well, I'll say this, and I said it on the blog earlier today, right before the show, actually. I don't ever fault a GM like Joe Nieuwendyk for coming in and firing the existing coach. If he's not your guy, don't put him out there, let him have a little try, and then can him right away. you know, he did it respectfully. He fired Tippett, gives him a chance at other jobs, and says, "Hey, you're not my guy. I respect what you've done, and you can't not respect Dave Tippett. He's one of the more respected guy around, most respected, you know, coaches around the league. Very
6 years in Dallas. Well, he had a good run in Dallas.
Yeah, and so he's moving
except
on.
For this past year, but I think I blame that on Brett Hull more than anybody.
Well, here and so he lets him go, and I, you know, Nuenda gets is allowed to do that. In terms of Tippett's tenure in Dallas, I thought he had, you know, they had trouble getting over the hump, admittedly, until last season when they conference finally finals. beat the Sharks mm-hmm. in the second round in a big series, and then they went against Detroit in this conference finals, and they lost in six games, which is very respectable. You lost, you know, to the best team in the National Hockey League, the eventual Stanley Cup champions, mm-hmm. And that was it. So I thought they had finally got over the hump, and clearly the management, Les Jackson and Brett Hull at that time, had thought the same way because they added up and loaded up, you know, with Sean Avery thinking that he'll be the key to making it to the next round, carrying forward. Well, this year, you know, Mike Modano really slowed down again. Avery was obviously a problem in the locker room. Brendan Morrow got injured for the entire season.
Which you can't overstate the importance of that injury to that team.
Mike Ribeiro's had a, you know, setback season. The defense, the young defense there had a little bit of trouble.
Brad Richards was injured too.
Brad Richards injured broke both wrists. And then you have Marty Turco, who, even throughout that all, Dallas was really doing a pretty good job of keeping the shots down. And Turco just didn't have it this year, and he was letting in bad goals at bad times, just letting in everything, really. And Tippett had a lot of trouble. The whole team had a lot of trouble. And so is Tippett held responsible for, you know, their lack of production? Sure. Do the players also have to burden some of that responsibility? I think so, too. So I don't think this is a reflection really on Dave Tippett's ability to coach. I think he'll be back in the National Hockey League very soon, but I think it more so has to do with Joe Nieuwendyk wanting his own guy and maybe wanting his own guy in the mold of a more offensive coach.
Ezzy, let's talk about the guy that Joe Nieuwendyk wants. But all indications, as I mentioned, says it's Mark Crawford. Your thoughts on Dallas hiring Mark Crawford to be their new head coach?
Well, I definitely like his work on Hockey Night in Canada, that's for sure. He's a great commentator. And he's probably been out of the game for too long. And Crawford is very, very offensive first. And, you know, he had lots of success in Vancouver. They don't have the Stanley Cup run to show for it. But Crawford is probably someone who, you know, Joe Nieuwendyk is familiar with and thinks that Dallas didn't really get enough out of some of their prospects last year, Brunstrom and Erickson, and obviously
you got enough out of Erickson.
Well,
but Brunstrom, I agree, he was
maybe not so much Erickson,
but Lundqvist, Erickson, yeah, a lot of the younger yeah.
Brunstrom, but
the guys they needed to step up to, you know, take a bigger role now that their veterans are getting a little bit older, just couldn't shoulder the
defense
load
especially
year.
I thought, as he, I mean,
right.
I just thought that some of the guys there just took a little bit of a step back. You know, Grossman, still good, talented players. Don't get me wrong, he played, you know, pretty well, but he had trouble. And Fistrich, who's on the Moose now, had trouble, obviously, and sent down to the AHL.
He's getting a lot of quality seasoning with the Moose.
He is,
right
but
now,
I mean, you're talking about guys who they thought had taken a step forward and now maybe taking a little bit of a step back. Sergei Zubov was injured.
Are you guys? Let me ask you guys both this one. Are you okay with Mark Crawford being hired there? Is he the right coach for the job?
You know, it's hard to say because I don't know what that team's going to look like. I think he's better for a veteran team. He can gnaw on you a bit, and he sometimes gets on the wrong side of the wrong players. But I like the way he coaches in terms of the style of play. And I just wonder if the team, as it's currently constructed, I don't believe can succeed in a Mark Crawford system. So I foresee some changes in Dallas.
And do you think that, so you would say that Joe Nieuwendyk has a bigger plan in store?
Absolutely.
Any chance Marty Turco's on his way out of there?
I don't think anybody's taking his salary.
That's the only
5.7 million? Yeah, I don't think so.
But like you said, though, Rich, like, and I don't disagree with you because I think Crawford, he had trouble in LA.
He did. I mean, he wasn't well-liked.
He wasn't well-liked and didn't really get out. They've been rebuilding since the lockout, maybe even before the lockout.
Well,
so I mean, Nieuwendyk might be looking at some of the players that he played with in his NHL career, or other veterans that he's familiar with, looking to maybe not rely so much on some of the prospects that they have in their system.
You know, I agree with you, and it's
hard to rebuild your team through free agency in this day.
It is a little bit easier than before in terms of the age that they become free agents now is 25 as opposed to 31.
That's true.
But even so, I mean, you're paying a lot of money, and so you better be getting serious results for the money you're paying, because in free agency, you're generally going to overpay.
And any mistakes you make are especially amplified, as the people in Dallas can attest to this past offseason.
That's going to come back to bite them, no matter what you say. Avery is cutting into that salary cap. As you know, it's not hugely significant, but it's significant nonetheless.
Listen, when you have a cap and you're spending money on a person who's not contributing, it's going to affect you negatively.
Right, and his, you have to give that team to Brendan Morrow and let him be the leader. And last year, some people said that Avery rubbed off on Morrow the wrong way. Well, Morrow needs to be the leader and can't have distractions like that around the room. Neuendijk played with Morrow. He knows what he's all about, and I'm sure he'll have him be the captain and, you know, mold the team in that way. I think Mike Modano has obviously seen his better days. I wonder how long Mike Ribeiro's even there. I think Joe Neuendijk's is there for a serious house cleaning. How quickly it happens, I'm not sure. But, you know, reading into this move, I would assume it'd be sooner rather than later.
Yeah, he's got off the blocks in a hurry. Well, the next coaching dominoes to fall, of course, are in New Jersey and Calgary, with Brent Sutter leaving his job there. Of course, if you want to chime in, please do so at 780-KICK, 780-5425. Join the conversation. But Brent Sutter left his job, resigned, stepped down, whatever you like, from the New Jersey Devils, something that had been rumored going on.
I wonder what
months.
Stan Fischler thinks of that. Remember we asked him, you know, is Brent Sutter going to resign, going to step down? Why would Brent Sutter? He wasn't very happy with the question, but I think he's being a little bit defensive in terms of New Jersey hockey. And this was, and I'm saying that because this was a move that most people saw coming.
I think we started speaking about this, I'm going to say, close to 6 months ago. Back in our olden days when we did podcasts, I think we mentioned it.
Yeah, I believe we did. And how could you not? It was always in the papers, and Sutter really didn't refute the comments. And even yesterday, when people talked to him about the Calgary job, if you read closely into what he said, or just read the actual text of what he said, he did not say no.
Well, because
I got a question for you guys. I got a question. When Brent Sutter got hired for New Jersey, did you really think he was going to stay on for this whole contract?
You know, I thought because it took them so long to finally, he said when he got hired that it took him so long to finally agree to coach New Jersey that he'd be there for the 3 years. I didn't think he'd be there any longer than the 3 years, but I thought he'd be there for three.
Yeah, yeah.
I think the fact that New Jersey was ousted in the first round had a lot to do with that. I wasn't really buying into the fact that Brent Sutter was considering, you know, leaving New Jersey, you know, 20 or 30 games into the season. The chatter continued. You know, some people took it seriously. Other people didn't take it seriously. Brent Sutter had phenomenal success this year. I think New Jersey had the most victories that they've ever had. I think 51 victories this year.
He is one of the best coaches in the National
Hockey
League.
If they win game 7, I think he's still in New Jersey. I think if they make it to the second round, he's still in New Jersey.
Well, he's not the type of coach, though, that would be happy with, and Lou Lamoriello is not the type of GM, and the New Jersey Devils are not the type of franchise that are happy with getting to the playoffs, regardless if Broder was injured or this guy had a bad year, or, you know, if Rolston didn't play that well.
Read Rolston's comment this morning, he didn't seem to like Sutter that much. But all the other players that I read, especially Jamie Langenbrenner, who was made the captain by Brent Sutter, really, really liked what he did there. And I think it's hard not to like what he did there, and I think that you're going to see him turn up probably in Calgary, if not this year, then next year.
Richie, hasn't Rolston always been known for having a pretty, pretty spotty attitude, though?
There's compensation that will have to be paid to New Jersey.
Well, that's the issue.
If he tries to get to Calgary this year.
This is how I see it. If the compensation is too steep, Daryl Sutter steps behind the bench, waits the year.
And then hires his brother.
I agree.
Now, the one thing is, though, is ownership and our president, Ken King, are ownership and president Ken King on board for that? Or do they say, hey, let's see what you do this year, and then we'll see if you can make a decision on who's coaching next year?
That's always a risk.
But I feel like
it's
Brent Sutter is the coach that you want to be hiring.
Well, I mean,
Daryl Sutter really wants
the guy does is win.
And Daryl Sutter really wants, that's exactly right, and Daryl Sutter really wants no part in coaching that team.
No, he pretty much said as much. I mean, he said exactly as much, and the key is, I mean,
the key word is interim.
How much is compensation going to be?
And I have no idea. It really depends on the relationship between Lamoriello and Sutter. I really believe that.
Sure, because Detroit and Calgary and New Jersey might play each other once or twice next year at most.
Yeah, once or twice at most. I can't see it being a first round pick. I would guess it would be. I could see them both agreeing. Now, I don't know. I have no clue, but I could see them both agreeing and saying, "Hey, for a second round pick."
You think even that much?
Yeah, second or third round pick I can see for Sutter.
Second round pick is it's a decently steep price.
I agree, but it's not a first round pick.
Does Brent Sutter have the players on that team to play the style he wants to play?
Well, one NHL executive said today in Alan Mackey's article that he wasn't sure if he could do any better than Keenan had with this squad. I disagree. I disagree wholeheartedly. I think that he could. I think that the talent is on the ice. Talent is in the dressing room. It's a system that needs to be put in place, and the discipline from a Brent Sutter. Sure, Mike Keenan's a disciplinarian. Brent Sutter's different. In this day and age, Brent Sutter will get through to players better than Mike Keenan, and he has a system in place, a high-tempo forechecking system, but you have to be defensively responsible. If you're playing for any Sutter, you better be defensively responsible. And I think that Brent Sutter, if he takes this team next year, people are saying, oh, Calgary's on the way down. Obviously, they'll need better goaltending from Nemika Kiprusoff. But overall, I believe that they
I don't think Kiprusoff's play on the ice is a problem. He's facing 8,000 shots.
That's an issue, too. But, I mean, he wasn't great. He wasn't good.
He wasn't great. But, I mean, he's seen a lot of rubber.
Right. And he's seen a lot of high-quality chances against him.
This could be a boon for Dion Phaneuf rejuvenating his career, though.
Good point. Never thought of that.
I mean, Brent Sutter coming in there, Dion Phaneuf won't be able to freelance as much. At least he won't be able to
Wouldn't he be perfect for that team?
Brent Sutter,
you don't think they'd win the division next year?
I think players, to me, if I'm a player, the best recipe for success probably is a hard forechecking team that at the same time has to be defensively responsible. I see a lot of success in that.
To me, it's the defensively responsible angle that is the focus here, because
you can't play shinny.
Calgary was playing shinny.
You can't do it. It doesn't work.
Boys, I have a few problems with Brent Sutter going to Calgary.
He's leaving your New Jersey Devils.
Of course.
I was going to say, it has
nothing to do with his coaching style. I'm not going to argue that. Right. When I heard that Brent Sutter was going to be the Devils head coach, I was doing cartwheels in my front lawn. But I have a problem
that
with him.
That explains that earthquake.
I have problems with him, not divulging that information. He isn't saying yes, he isn't saying no. He's almost leaning more towards, no, I don't think I'm really thinking about that. I just would like to go back to Alberta and spend more time with my family and the Red Deer Rebels.
Well, if he does go public with it, then the pressure is on Calgary to either give up or not give up the compensation, whereas you can negotiate in private.
It's sort of interesting, we've sort of been keeping an eye on the Calgary papers. They're not screaming from the rooftops that Brent Sutter must be hired tomorrow. Which is sort of surprising.
They've been writing about it, though.
They've been writing about it because everybody's made the connection because it's an obvious connection. But there's not this overwhelming... I think they should hire him.
Right.
But there hasn't been this, overwhelming groundswell of support that's bubbling up, that's forcing Daryl Sutter's hand, really.
But regardless of the compensation, he signed a three-year contract.
Right.
So, I mean, he committed to the New Jersey Devils. And I realized that, if things weren't working out with certain players, it's going to make New Jersey seem less attractive. But I mean, he's their coach.
I don't think it had anything to do with the players that he had in New Jersey.
No, I think it's just him.
I just think that this guy has a odd desire to be close to Red Deer.
No, odd desire. I mean, give him credit. He wants to be close to his family. He's putting that priority first. Good for him. I have no problem with that at all. If he wants to coach in Calgary, which is an hour from his ranch, more power to him. They're going to have to give up compensation for him. But I do not look down upon Brent Sutter for making this decision. Lots of people in the hockey world and in the professional sports world in general will put the team and the game ahead of a lot of other things.
But
Brent Sutter's not doing that.
When he signed on with New Jersey in the first place, did he think it was near Wainwright? He looked at a map initially? Did he know where New Jersey was compared to Red Deer?
Believe me, Brent Sutter probably could have got more cash in the longer term if he wanted it.
Probably, but the whole family first concept, all of a sudden it's family first after 2 years? It sort of rings a little bit hollow to me. I think it's just sort of a convenient fallback.
Well, I disagree, and let's see what he does. If he goes and takes a job in L.A., then you're right.
Well, no, I don't expect that he'll take a job in L.A. I don't think that. But, I mean, why? If I'm Lou Lamoriello, I'm a little bit pissed off.
If you're Lou Lamoriello, you have to have known this was a pretty this is an issue. I'm sure he and Brent Setter have talked about it, but not only that, if you recall, Lamoriello and Setter, Lamoriello had been apparently trying to get Setter to coach that team for some time.
Right. Yeah, fine.
So he obviously knew it took him a lot of convincing to get him there, and it was probably going to take a lot of convincing to keep him there.
So he only, I mean, so he was prepared to, you know, have him there just for 2 years?
Well, how long do the other coaches in New Jersey last?
Well, I was just going to say Lou Lamoriello loves to spin the wheel and switch coaches.
Care.
They've had 11 coaches in the last 12 years.
It's amazing.
Is it really 11
and they,
coaches
and
in the
last 12
years?
How many cups do they have over that time?
Three?
Three.
Well, 95 was
2000,
almost 14 years.
95, 2000, and 2004.
I don't know. I kind of agree with Drew on this one, though, about it took them so long to actually covet Brent Setter, though. And to me, it seems like it almost is one of those backhanded moves that he's only there for 2 years now and he's out of it. And like, I mean, I remember Brent Setter rumors happening years ago about him wanting to coach an NHL team.
Did he use New Jersey to prove his NHL bona fides?
I don't think he needed to.
Dave, by the way, why aren't you agreeing with me, too? I made that. I was
sorry,
on Drew's side.
Sorry, yes. You too. You too, buddy.
Well, I mean, it's... He... Like what? Like we don't really know if this was his plan for the last 6 or 7 months, or if, like we were talking about before, or if this was basically made in the last 2 months since
New Jersey was
ousted.
We have to realize also.
The last 2 months. We've been talking about it for the last 6 months.
That Calgary has all of his brothers are working for the Flames.
Yeah, I understand that he wants to. I understand that. I understand that. But why all of then? I mean, if he was this, why go to New Jersey in the first place? If Calgary's, you know, home is where the heart is.
It wasn't. Now, 2 years ago, they had hired, was it Keenan?
Keenan. Why hire Keenan if everybody wants Sutter? It's not like the other Sutter brothers just came aboard in the last 6 months.
Maybe Brent wanted to prove himself under somebody other than his brother.
Maybe, but you know, I think you use the New Jersey Devils and Lou Lamoriello at your own peril. 20 minutes past the hour, let's go to break on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
If you like working with people and are looking for a meaningful and challenging career, take a look at some of the community services programs offered at Red River College. Disability and Community Support is a 2-year program that helps students develop the skills they need to assist individuals with disabilities in their day-to-day activities. If working with children and youth interests you, check out the Early Childhood Education and Child and Youth Care programs. Learn how to provide quality childcare as well as how to help children and youth with emotional and behavioral difficulties lead productive lives. All of the programs include hands-on training, so you'll be ready to make positive changes in people's lives right after graduation. Community services graduates are needed throughout the process are good. Get ready to make a difference in the lives of others by signing up for a community services program at Red River College today. For more information, contact Red River College on the web at rrc.ca or call 632-2328. 632-2328. Red River College, going places.
Call Unicity Taxi at 925-3131. Unicity Taxi has the most cabs on the road, the most advanced 24-hour dispatch system, and 75% of their fleet is hybrid vehicles. Reserve your cab in advance and your driver will be right on time. They can even set you up with a charge account. Let Unicity Taxi do the driving at 925-3131.
You're listening to 92.9 Kick FM, and you're not alone.
Thousands of people just like you tune in for the freshest new and local music in town, cutting-edge talk and analysis programs, and the best and brightest up-and-coming young broadcasters.
Advertising your business, services, and causes supports the station and keeps our programs on the air.
Email sales@kick.fm or call 997-6234, and we'll help you get your message out to your customers. On 92.9 Kick FM, Winnipeg's Indie Station.
We're back on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. To reach us in studio, 780-KICK, 780-5425. Put an area code 204 in front of that. Whatever's on your mind, dial up the number. We'll talk about it on the air. We got 40 minutes left to go. I've just received another email from makeit7.ca. That's my third email of the day.
I didn't sign up for makeit7.ca, Drew, so I don't know.
I did just to... they're still going to my junk mail, but just to see what he has to say.
Let's hear.
He's got Doug Gilmore sending a message. There's a message from Doug Gilmore. Make It 7 fans, I have had the privilege of playing for 7 different NHL teams in my career. The number has a nice ring to it, don't you think? There are no
New
greater
Jersey, Toronto,
Calgary,
St. Louis, Buffalo,
Montreal.
What's the seventh?
Gilmore was dynamite as a Hab, by the way.
What is the seventh?
I keep reading it. We'll think about it.
Okay, we'll think about it. There are no greater hockey fans than Canadians, and like you, I want to see a seventh NHL team in Canada. Thursday, I am in Toronto co-hosting the annual Dougie, Jim Cuddy, and Friends Celebrity Bowl for Special Olympics, a bowling tournament that raises funds to support sport programs for people with intellectual disabilities across the country. Jim Cuddy and I are being joined by 50 celebrities from the sports and music worlds to support this important cause. I'm not sure what this has to do with anything.
Didn't he play in Ottawa, too, at the end?
St. Louis, Calgary, Toronto, New Jersey, Chicago, Buffalo, Montreal, Toronto.
Chicago, that was the other
Chicago.
One.
When did he play for Chicago?
He got traded there for...
98 to 2000.
J.P. Dumont, didn't he? Yeah, J.P. Dumont went from Chicago to Buffalo for Doug Gilmore. Well, that turned out well.
Yeah, good trade for Buffalo.
Yeah, pretty good.
Jim Balsillie shares my passion for sport and for Special Olympics.
All right, well, you know what? Enough about Make It
and
Seven.
And I share his... this is nonsense. I mean, it is actually, there's no reason for for having received this
That's
email.
That's why it went into your junk mail.
Yeah, I know, but some of them are even a little bit more interesting. Like, earlier today, I got another one from Balsillie. What the other one earlier?
Did he address it, Drew?
No, he didn't address it to me, which is surprising. I thought he would have. I don't know where it is. I think it's probably gone by now. It was
You don't have him as a BBM contact?
I don't. You know, he keeps ignoring my pin requests.
Drew, are you going to give us a little taste of your Twitter tweets right now? Or
you can reach us.
Whoa, easy guys, easy. Come on.
You can reach Illegal Curve. Is Illegal
Curve? www.twitter.com/IllegalCurve.
There you go. And Cold Hard Rants is also on there as www.twitter.com/ColdHardRanter. That's RANTER. Anyways, the other one today, there's a Make It 7 day, which is next Friday in Canada. I don't know about you guys, but I'm thinking of taking the day off work, paper macheing myself in a gigantic number 7 and running around the city. Ezzy, you want to get started on that? You're already working on your mock replica Stanley Cup for Friday night's game. Can you get a big 7 going?
Well, I'm pretty excited about this rally. But I think I'd rather be on the golf course than supporting this particular event.
What exactly is this doing for the cause?
That's what I don't understand. I'm not
Does he
sure.
need to raise money? Isn't he worth billions of dollars?
I think he's just is this really exciting people? Are there people who are all a Twitter, pardon the pun, over the fact that Canada? I mean, I know that if you're in the Hamilton area, you're excited. Sure, I understand.
And rightfully
that.
So.
But if you're in Saskatoon, do you give a damn?
No, I'd like to see a team in Canada. Don't get me wrong, and especially a team that's been struggling. You know, it's not like I want to take a team out of the States because it's in the States and move it to Canada. If a team is struggling as the Phoenix Coyotes are.
It makes sense for that team to be in Canada. Admittedly, yes, I agree. But if you're in Saskatoon, are you celebrating Make It 7 Day?
You know, we're talking about it on the show, but am I personally letting it overshadow the Stanley Cup Finals? No.
Certainly not.
Well, so. James Myrtle asked us this. We're located, I personally believe that I consider this Western Canada, but I guess we're Central Canada.
We can drive 30 minutes down the Trans-Canada Highway going west, and we will hit the geographical center of Canada.
Right. How important are most people in Winnipeg that Hamilton's getting a team? What does that do for us? Does that give us more hope that Winnipeg might get a team three or four years from now? Maybe. But, hey, we've got the Moose in Game 6 of the Calder Cup Finals. Let's keep things in perspective here. We got to cheer on Jason Krogh here.
Two more sellouts coming for the Moose this weekend, or potentially on Sunday if they pull it off on Friday in Game 6.
Before talking about the Moose, though, let's want to dive in a little bit to the Heatley.
Let's talk about Heatley first. We'll talk about the Moose next segment.
Right.
And of course, you can always chime in at 780-KICK, 780-5425. But let's talk about Danny Heatley demanding his trade.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start off here with Heatley. I'm not a Heatley guy. I never have been. I realize his skills. I realize that he has a Brett Hull-like shot and that he's got some of the quickest hands in the National Hockey League. Do I think that he's worth $7.5 million to a guy who is, kind of one-dimensional?
Yeah.
Not great defensively, not very physical. And granted, that one dimension is scoring goals, and that's very important. But do I think that he's worth $7.5 million? In certain circumstances, certain teams, he probably is worth the risk. But I'm not so sure I'd want to be putting $7.5 million or, 15 to 20% of my cap into a player, into Danny Heatley.
That's a team in Ottawa. And I know it firsthand because I've had the displeasure of watching them for a lot of years. That's a team that needs to be blown up.
Well, it's going to happen, Drew. It's on the way.
I know it's on the way. And the first person, the two people on that team that I'm keeping are pardon me, are Alfredsson and Heatley, because I think they're two solid character players in addition to being very skillful. And I'm getting rid of Jason Spezza so quickly, that he will go wherever he's. It's in a case of addition by subtraction. As far as I'm concerned, he's very talented. I've never seen a game where Jason Spezza, where I could say Jason Spezza stood out tonight. He loafs, he floats.
You don't like Spezza, eh?
I do not like Spezza. From the minute I sat there in the Scotiabank Place, Correll Center, whatever the hell they want to call it,
the problems that they had there with Spezza. I think that there are games I've seen where he stood out, and I think that he makes his teammates better. I think that, you know, centers that are, you know, basically 100-point guys, if they're healthy, are hard to come by.
He just doesn't, I don't know if it's that he's not a leader, and there's nothing wrong with necessarily that, but he just seems, he doesn't have any presence. I want a guy who's got presence. And I think Heatley, you know, has a little bit of a presence. And Alfredsson,
I mean,
Heatley's just the kind of guy, I noticed him when he was on the ice more than Spezza usually. Spezza, if he doesn't have the puck, or if his head isn't into it, he loafs and he floats and he rotates and he doesn't actually do anything.
So I have to respectfully disagree. I'm more of a Spezza guy than a Healy guy. I'm not sure what the return is going to be on Healy. I think that's going to be a telltale sign of what the return on other star players is going to be. You know, if Healy goes before Le Cavalier, then you know what Le Cavalier can fetch you in a trade. I think that a team like James mentioned in Minnesota. Yeah. Makes some sense.
They've probably got some young assets that they can trade back to Ottawa. Especially, I also like the idea of getting rid of a guy into the other conference, so you never actually have to
see. I think so, too. I mean, you're going to hear rumors of Calgary pursuing because he's from Calgary.
Yeah.
You're going to hear rumors of Edmonton because Edmonton's rumored with every single star player now.
I don't think
you're going to hear rumors of Vancouver.
I don't see how Calgary could ever make it work with the cap.
They're no, I agree. I'm just saying you're going to hear it just because of where he's from. And there's going to be other teams that jump into the mix and throw their name in there. I mean, imagine Heatley on a team that's not, you know, generally takes very good care of the cap. Imagine a Marlowe for Healy kind of swap with some other things thrown in on San Jose's side. Well, how would Heatley look beside Joe Thornton?
Well, Rich, I think
very dynamic. That's the answer to that question.
There's no question that Heatley has immense skill. I almost disagree with both of you as far as Heatley and Spezza goes. I know that's kind of difficult to do when we're having.
How you're going to be able to do that and still make a good point here?
Stay tuned. In this Heatley versus Spezza debate, we're looking at this. From the perspective of them being on the super line with Alfredsson, and they really had a terrible year, and they didn't really pick it up until later on in the year. And I think both of them need a change of scenery because of what happened. I mean, they really struggled, and it seemed like the entire team gave up on themselves. And now until Klustin came on, and they got better when it didn't matter.
But no, remember, guys, this is the issue here. Klustin's the issue. Heatley doesn't like Klustin. That's why he wants to be traded.
I'm curious as to what happened there between the two of them. Klustin's a young guy. There's not much of an age difference there,
Klustin's,
is there?
Klustin's a bit of a hard, tough guy.
Well, I can't imagine that Spezza gets along with him either. Spezza always looks like he's on the verge of tears.
No, I mean, Spezza didn't seem to have a problem with him.
Well, that we've heard of so far.
From what we hear, Heatley and Alfredsson are, you know, generally keep to themselves on that Senators team. And this is not in a bad way at all. In fact,
that team needs more introverts.
But I'm saying they generally keep to themselves, so I'm not so sure that there's any really off-ice chemistry between those guys and some of the other players in the team.
Richie, does Ottawa have a chance at acquiring Bomeister?
I just don't see it happening. You can't with Heatley on board, as you have Heatley and Spezza and Albertson eating up a lot of money there, and you're paying a lot of money to... was it the Kuba they re-signed? They got Phillips, but I don't think they have enough cap room. I don't have the numbers right on hand.
Well, if you subtract Heatley's $7.5 million.
Right, what are you getting in return, though? Are people gonna take on a $7.5 million salary and give back nothing? Just draft picks? Generally not.
Well, if they can, I guess it's too NBA-ish to expect a sign and trade or something.
And
like
do we expect a Heatley for Hossa kind of deal again? Probably not.
No, that was just a...
You never know, though.
That was just a circumstance where it fit.
I think Ottawa struggled a lot from not having a number one offensive defenseman. I think that team really struggled when that one line was counted on to be everything.
And it wasn't.
And it wasn't. And and nobody stepped up.
That team, I mean, even their cup run, to me, was surprising. I mean, I was there for the playoffs. I was there for the regular season that year. And
Drew, we can talk. I disagree just because of the fact that their defense that year was Redden, Mezeros, Phillips, Volchenkov, and Corvo, and Pricing, and that was just a tremendous group of puck movers, and then those solid two defensemen who could play against the other team's best line. It was a really good mix on the back end.
Yeah. They haven't been able to remotely replicate
and
that.
And the Fishers and the Vermets and the Chris Kellys really stepped up that year. You know, the guys like the Jordan Stahls this year, they really stepped up, and then the first line was the first line.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have that kind of secondary depth anymore for whatever reason, and they certainly don't have the type of defensive talent.
No, they don't have. Is there anybody there on the back end who you think is a true number one?
Not number one. I mean, Volchenkov and Phillips, I like both of them. Are they number one defensemen? No.
Yeah.
Is Kuba? No.
No. Those are, I mean, they're, that's not a bad 2-3-4. Even a 2A, 2B, 3.
No, 2-3-4. Yeah, it's fine. 2-3-4. I mean, at the end of the day, we talked to this before on the show or on the podcast. Ottawa's downfall was their lack of assets that they got in return for their best players. I mean, they didn't get anything in return for Chara. They did not get anything in return for Wade Redden. They got very little in return for Marty Havlat. So look at those three. You're talking about three all-star players.
The Arneson family might be listening to the show.
Three? No, he was in a different deal after, I think.
Wasn't he in the Havlat deal?
No, he was in the summer deal, and they got Pricing, who they let go as a UFA. And then they got Jesse Winchester, I think, that was in that deal.
Arneson was only in Ottawa for 2 months.
Well, regardless,
3 months.
Think about that, Drew. You're talking about three all-star caliber players, and you got nothing for them. That's how you start your downturn as an organization, when you don't get return on your assets.
Except Havlat was barely playing for them at that point in time.
No,
at all.
No.
He was injured all the time.
He was, but you can't get more for him?
Well, I'm sure you probably can.
If you can get that little for him, then you keep him.
Yeah,
I believe when he signed that contract, he was an RFA, I believe, or was he? Might have been a UFA. I don't remember. But regardless, I mean, I thought they should have got more for him. And then the Chara and Redden leaving for nothing was not. You just can't do that.
Can they get Alexander?
And they picked the wrong guy too. They picked Redden over Chara,
which was mind-boggling.
So
that was just. And I mean, I still think they haven't recovered from the chemistry issues they have in that dressing room.
So. That very much could be true, and they are obviously in the problem I have with the whole thing is the publicizing of this trade request.
You're right. You know, you signed a 5-year contract.
Don't publish it because you're putting Brian Murray in a really hard place here. And remember when Chris Pronger, everybody knew Chris Pronger was on the move?
Yeah.
You know, Kevin Lowe gets ripped apart for that deal. Kevin Lowe's been ripped apart for other deals. Regardless, he was put in a very hard position.
Yeah.
You know, the guy wants to be moved. Everybody knows it. Everybody's going to lowball you because they know he needs to get out of there. And Brian Murray better stand tall here because he has better stand up to Danny Heatley here and say, hey, if I don't get what I believe is fair value for you, you're staying on this team. You signed a contract.
I'm curious what would happen if a GM dug in his heels and said no. And then a player dug in his heels. It's never happened. The GMs are always
so... Well, the Senators aren't switching the coach again.
No, the GMs are always so eager to accommodate these trades. And I mean, you know, Danny Heatley, what did you expect when you signed up for the you know, a 5-year contract?
Boys, I just wanted to read something that James Gordon wrote in his blog, Hockey Capital.
We almost had him on the show tonight. Hopefully have him on soon to talk about this.
This is what he wrote at the end of his article, okay? By the way, you can follow him on Twitter at SensReporter. Yeah. Gordon said, one media wag told me after a particularly testy scrum earlier this year that Danny Heatley doesn't like playing in Ottawa. He likes winning in Ottawa. Heatley's reaction to Clouston suggests that wasn't right either. Today it looks like the only thing Heatley likes about Ottawa is the departure gate at the airport. There won't be any fans there to bid him a fond farewell either. I'm sure they'll be happy to welcome him back with a chorus of boos, however.
Well, probably very true.
There's a very good piece in The Citizen this morning. I believe it was either Wayne Scanlon or Ken Warren talking about Danny Heatley the person and what he's like. How he doesn't like the attention and how he tries to fly under the radar and type of personality he was, which was interesting when Myrtle brought it up about being surprised that the agent made this public. And I was surprised too because Danny Heatley, as we've spoken about, is an introvert. And J.P. Barrie bringing it out, I guess, is a tactic to put pressure on Brian Murray, but it also seems to be counter to what you'd expect from somebody who's representing Danny Heatley because Danny Heatley keeps to himself so much.
That's, you know, probably... And I mean, I think we all know why Danny Heatley likes being out of the spotlight. he was in the spotlight early in his career for a tragedy.
I mean, right.
And I mean, you never, nobody can ever, you know, put themselves into those shoes or actually know what he's thinking. So it's very understandable that I don't begrudge him in the least bit for being an introvert.
No, I think that's fine.
I think that team needs a whole hell of a lot more of introverts.
Yeah, I mean, he is playing the least pressure out of all the six Canadian markets is going to be in Ottawa. Granted, it's still more pressure than most markets, period, but probably the least.
But that
of
would
six.
Probably be safe. They're always in the shadow of Toronto and Montreal, right. Given where they are geographically. Right. What about him back to Philly? Him and Emery can make a nice reunion.
No, I don't see there any way that Brian Murray trades him within conference.
I'm kidding.
But Emery, we can talk about in the last segment if you want.
Yeah, I mean,
because Emery has changed.
Oh yeah, sure he has.
Going to a team that has a lack of discipline, he's changed.
I don't understand why Philly, why they refuse to get a goaltender. It's like their trademark. They refuse to get a goaltender.
Philadelphia loves to get guys like that, though.
Yeah.
They are not, like, you know, Richie mentioned that, you know, he's changed and that Philadelphia has a dressing room of guys that are known for their solid leadership and being mature, which obviously Richie's being sarcastic. But Philly loves to have a team with an edge. They love having those type of players.
This isn't 1975. The Broad Street Bullies have not been around. Get a goaltender and you know, play the damn game. Play to win. Don't play to beat up the other team. It's nonsense. It's utter garbage. Ever since they chose John Van Beesbrook over Curtis Joseph in 1990-whatever.
Fair enough.
Four?
97.
Seven?
Yeah.
Ever since that day, because everybody had Cujo going there. Everybody and their brother had Cujo going to Philly. They signed Van Beesbrook, and ever since then, their one Achilles heel, more than anything else, has been goaltending.
Or no, it was after 97. I think it was 99 or 2000.
No. No.
Because Van Beesbrook, because the Rangers played in the playoffs 97 against the Flyers, and it was snow in Hextall, so it had to be a little bit later. 98, maybe. One around that time.
I can't believe it was that long
ago. It was Van Beesbrook, Joseph, and Richter were the ones.
They were all the free agents that year.
And then Joseph was supposed to go to New York, and then the New York ended up signing Richter back, and then he went. JVB went to Philly. Flyers, and he just didn't do the job.
And Cujo went to Toronto.
Back to Toronto,
and then Belfour went to Dallas. Isn't that how it worked?
Might have been. Yeah, I think so.
I think that was how the dominoes fell. Anyways, I've always wondered, had they signed Cujo?
It has dated back to the days of who's their big time goalie? I'm forgetting his name now. Who won the cups?
Which era?
The 70s.
Oh, Perron.
Yeah, Bernie Perron. Since then, they really haven't had a tender.
No.
Hextall was good.
But Hextall played with an edge. He played the Philadelphia Flyers style.
Ray Emery.
Win a cup, nobody's going to complain about the style of play he played.
But Drew, Emery wasn't signed to be the number one goalie. He's the backup to Perron.
No, Perron's gone.
Perron's a free agent.
Perron's gone.
Emery's your number
where
one.
Where have I been? Have I been watching Dancing with the Stars? I didn't know that.
The article today said, quote, from an NHL executive, or Flyers executive, we think that Ray Emery is a better goaltender than Martin Biron.
Okay, that's absolutely redonkulous.
No, it might be true, but I still don't think he's the number one goaltender.
Is it that substantial that you'd... Well, I don't look at it that way. I don't look at it Ray Emery compared to Martin Biron. I look at it Ray Emery compared to the free agent class. Wouldn't Nikolai Habibulin look really good on a team that kind of needs some veteran influence and some good goaltending? I know some people are down in his numbers, but he was still pretty productive for Chicago this year, and he'd be a nice compliment to a team with a lot of scoring.
Do you think the fans in Philly are going to be happy if Emery gets into three fights, but the team sucks? That being a rhetorical question,
they're making
obviously
the playoffs, so the question is, can he do in the playoffs? And I mean, that Ottawa team that he went to the finals with didn't rely on him to make it to the finals.
No.
Let's be real here. That was a team that...
They had the great depth on defense, and we're well over time, of course, in this segment. So let's go to break, and when we come back, final segment, cheers and jeers, some moose talk, your phone calls, everything on the IllegalCurve.com radio show.
You're listening to 92.9 Kick FM, and you're not alone.
Thousands of people just like you tune in for the freshest new and local music in town, cutting-edge talk and analysis programs, and the best and brightest up-and-coming young broadcasters.
Advertising your business, services, and causes supports the station and keeps our programs on the air.
Email sales@kick.fm or call 997-6234, and we'll help you get your message out to your customers. On 92.9 Kick FM, Winnipeg's Indy Station.
CanadaShelly.com is your destination for information about Middle Eastern affairs. Canada Shelly, based in Winnipeg, conducts advocacy efforts by promoting Israel, fighting anti-Semitism, and educating Canadians on issues affecting Israel and our community. The free weekly e-paper and monthly Hebrew newspaper available online provides the most recent updates and news from Winnipeg, Canada, Israel, and throughout the world. Go to Canada Shelly. That's S-H-E-L-I.com.
Want to start a band? Learn to sing or get ready for Canadian Idol? I'm Alicia, author of the Sing Like a Pro vocal program. Go to prosinginglessons.com and download Sing Like a Pro today. Learn how to explode your vocal range, develop perfect pitch, and blow your audience away at prosinginglessons.com.
On the IllegalCurve.com radio show for one final segment. To join us on the lines, you can do so at 780-KICK, 780-5425, area code 204 in front of that. Guys, you want to spend a couple minutes talking about the Moose?
Let's do it.
Okay. We've reserved the final segment of each the last couple weeks for the Moose. Huge win last night in Hershey.
For those who don't know, the Calder Cup final,
yes,
is 3-2 in favor of Hershey, heading back to Winnipeg, Manitoba, for the last two games of the series.
That's right. Last, they split the first two. The AHL still uses the
2-3-2,
the antiquated 2-3-2. They split the first two games in Winnipeg. Hershey came home and won the first two, and then the Moose, facing a do-or-die game 5 last night, pulled off a... Corey Schneider stole them.
I caught a bit of the game, but yeah, I mean, Schneider, even at the end there, he was the rock that allowed them to bring this thing back to Winnipeg.
The parallels to to Schneider standing on his head in Game 5 and Habib Bourque standing on his head in Game 5 against the Red Wings in 1996.
That was a different story, Drew.
I know it's a different story, but the parallels there are easily made there.
I think that the Moose better play a heck of a lot better than they did in Game 5, because if they play that way against Hershey for two more games,
they can't do it. They have to.
One or two more games.
That's right. Scott Arneil himself said in his post-game comments that the Moose have not played the best they can play yet in this series.
They showed glimpses in Game 2 in Manitoba.
Hershey's probably their best game. We were there. Hershey is a good team, and I thought that even in Game 2 that they maybe outplayed them a bit. It wasn't substantial.
You know, I watched more... Moose action than last week or so than I did in the regular season. And Hershey just looks at the teams were 1-2 in points this year. I think there was 1 point between the Moose and the Hershey Bears.
Hershey's young defensemen, Alsner and Carlson, are very impressive.
Yeah, and they have a steady AHL veteran down there in Brian Helmer on the back end as well, former Moose player himself.
Former Moose player. I think that the guys like Alsner and Carlson you're going to see turn into real good NHL players very quickly.
Hershey just looks a little bit more skilled to me. They just seem maybe a half a step faster than the Moose right now.
More skilled, a step quicker though. Yeah,
A step quicker. It seems like the Moose are always, there's always a Hershey guy right on the Moose at every time. Moose won game 2, full credit to them. But the truth is it was a bad goal late in the game that gave them the victory. Some talk about the defenseman having a stick in the way that also may have
been a shot.
I thought he did too. I was thinking Don Cherry as soon as I saw it on the replay. But anyways, Game 6 back in Winnipeg, another sold-out MTS Center Friday night. There aren't any seats available. 15,000-plus people will be packing the...
Both sold out?
Oh, yeah. All sold out. Game 7, I believe, is already sold out.
Sure,
if it's not, if it isn't, there's 100 seats left that'll go very quickly depending on what happens in Game 6. It's been... The Moose have sort of... they've always struggled to gain their foothold, I think, in the city of Winnipeg. Since they've been here, the people here are, I'm going to say, a little snobby in that they still fancy themselves an NHL team, and as such, the Moose have had, they're supported, but there's no passion really behind them. I think that passion is sort of developing. This playoff run has certainly helped matters, but it was loud at the MTS Center in Game 2.
It was a good atmosphere.
Yeah, it was a very good atmosphere. And I think it'll be a rocking house in Game 5.
Oh, I think so.
Or Game 6.
I think that this series very well could go 7 games. And you're looking at two very good goaltenders that we talked about before. At the same time, it's going to be very difficult for Manitoba to win this game unless they start moving their feet a little bit more, starting to support the puck a little more and get the puck in deep and start working those defensemen, the younger defensemen, and even some, Helmer's a smaller guy. Get in deep, cycle the puck a bit, and put more pucks on Neuver.
And well, that first line of Grabner, Grabner,
Krogh,
and now they put Hodgson on that line.
Scored a nice goal last night, Hodgson.
Yeah. And, they, after sitting out in game four, right? They didn't play him in game four.
He's worn down. He's played a lot of hockey. It's going to be a stud.
Also, I mean, it's also worth pointing out games 3, 4, and 5 were played in three games in a 4-day span,
which is AHL usually does.
Yeah, I mean,
but doesn't discount the fact that they were tired.
They were tired, especially Hodgson was tired, and you could see he was tired. He was tired through the first three games of the series.
It was a good move by Coach Arneal there.
And now that they get 2 days off between games, Wednesday, Thursday, so tired shouldn't be much of a factor anymore.
It shouldn't. I mean, adrenaline's riding you here. There's only 2 more games that you can rest all summer.
I'm impressed, for those of us in Winnipeg who got to read the media reports as they developed throughout the course of the day, the Moose had a cheering section of just regular fans awaiting their arrival at the airport this morning.
Yeah, people have really gotten behind the team, and it's great to see.
Well, the Winnipeg fans, it's not that we haven't been behind them.
No, I agree.
But it's economics, I guess, as far as the big crowds. They were second in the league, I believe, in attendance, and they have been
right behind Hershey. Kudos
to the it's good for the AHL to have the top two teams, period, plus the top two attendance teams in the final.
That's right. There's all those years, there's always the years where Hamilton makes it and they get nobody there. Well, I mean, which is the Moose played the Marlies in the first round of the playoffs this year, and the Marlies play at a Ricoh Coliseum at the CNE in Toronto, and they had 2,000 people there.
It's good to see it packed out. The players, I would guarantee you this: the players would say to us. Hey, it changes the game when we play in front of a packed house.
It has to. You get anybody there watching you, and you step it up a little bit more just because. Just the adrenaline that's in it. But my point is, in the regular season, when the Moose play, if they lose, they lose. There's no real disappointment. It's, okay, nice game, whatever.
People are taking it hard now.
People are into it.
Randy Turner wrote an article about this the other day, that people are really starting to get into the Moose games and into the actual, into the play-by-play and period-by-period action, whereas, maybe back a few years ago, they'd go to the game, they wouldn't know what's going on, and they leave.
Or they came for the food or something like that. I mean, yesterday, did you ever think there'd be a situation or a time where you would switch from the NHL game, however briefly, but still, to the Moose game to see how that ended?
Yeah,
this is an opportunity for Winnipeg, our city, to win a championship. This is a big deal. And I mean, I think I can't argue with the people that say that this is what it had to be for that arena to be sold out. They had to be in the finals for 15,000 people to be.
They do well otherwise. They do very well in terms of contributing to the community. As we live in here, Winnipeg.
The arena is a huge asset. The arena was a necessary thing for Winnipeg to have for the Moose. And I mean, even 9,000 people there. It's a nice crowd. It's there's nothing wrong with going to the Moose games.
Good atmosphere.
There's it's an enjoyable night out.
Very few things. Very few things that organization could do differently.
They are probably the classiest of the AHL organizations.
I mean, this is the New York Yankees, the team that everybody wants to play for in the AHL.
Yeah, and I mean, and full credit, as we've said before, we've given credit to Mark Chipman and the staff there at True North Entertainment. And
that's good looking into the future. Maybe Jason Krogh, it's Krogh. Is it Krogh or Krogh?
I think it's Krogh now.
I apologize.
It was Krogh for a couple years at the beginning of his career.
That also,
maybe he'll stick around.
That also sends, I'm sure he will, but if the Moose will have him, I mean, that sends a good sign. The Moose, Jason Krogh, Krogh, whatever you want to call him, is on a AHL-only contract that the Moose are paying for themselves at a salary of $600,000 a year. So that said to them, that says to their fans immediately upon the start of the year that they're in it to win this whole thing.
Good.
The Moose are willing to spend money, and they're not just relying on the farm system to be the feeder for their success.
And let's say this, that the team that Bob Woods has in Hershey has been saddled with a lot more farm talent than the Vancouver Canucks have given to the Manitoba Moose.
Sure. I mean, lots of the guys who are playing in
Grabner's
Hershey
great,
right,
and Hodgson, but you're talking about Chris Bork, you're talking about Ulsner when he's playing now, and John Carlson, good young player, and
Neuwirth.
There you go. I mean, you're giving Schneider the Moose, and you're giving Hodgson and Grabner, but those other side, there's some good talent there too.
Yeah, the Moose have, but full credit for both teams. I have a hunch, and I have no basis for this at all. If it goes 7, we're going to see it on national television.
Really?
I think TSN would pick it up, either TSN or TSN2.
On the Friday night?
No, game 7. If it goes
Sunday night.
Sunday.
Yeah.
If it goes game 7, Sunday night, nothing else?
Because you won't see it on Friday because it will go up against the final.
Yeah, they
game
won't.
Game 7 of the final, yeah.
No, it won't be on. I don't even think. Is it televised locally on Friday?
Yes.
Is it?
Yeah. It's Shaw.
Shaw is still doing it? Okay. Because they, you know, I mean, they didn't broadcast games 1 and 2, obviously, because of, you know,
it being people who local. Don't, you know, people we're talking right now, some people are listening online and listening in their cars. People who don't, you generally watch AHL action. I advise you to watch it because it's worthwhile and it's, and you know, it's not like regular season games in the AHL or the AHL. This is big time playoff hockey.
This is better than the Thrashers Islanders regular season game.
It's worth your time, and I think that it's. I was very impressed with what I saw in Game 2, the speed and the competitiveness and the physicality and the goaltending especially, and I can't say enough about the goaltending on both sides. So I think that Game 6 and 7, if they are available on TV in your area, then it's worth watching.
Especially, and I think Game 7 will be, I hope that TSN would do the right thing and show it on to a national audience. And it would be nice for the entire country to see, you know, 15,000 people screaming at the MTS Center.
It would.
Do they have the option of showing it the entire game?
Well,
live?
I'm sure as the AHL would sell it to them for free.
Yeah, what would the AHL, you know, have? To, why would they, you know, drive a hard bargain?
Seems like more of a Sportsnet venture.
Yeah, a little bit. Sportsnet used to show some AHL games. Sportsnet has
Sunday Night Baseball, though.
Right. TSN's got nothing as far. Well, no.
Final.
NBA Finals. Maybe
TSN. Sunday or Saturday?
It's Sunday. I think they play Thursday. Oh, I don't know that. But even TSN, too.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, they got
TSN 2 could simulcast the Shaw broadcast.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, you know,
doesn't cost them anything.
That's right. There's a lot of options for TSN to show this on a national basis, and I think it would be a very good thing for TSN to do. Usually, when it comes to Winnipeg, TSN screws us. They have for years, just because, you know, call it in
rant.
No, not a rant. Not a rant. Just. You know, it's been historical that TSN and Winnipeg have never seen eye to eye. There always seems to be some sort of reason why the Bomber game that was promised isn't actually being shown. Instead, they're showing NASCAR or some nonsense like that. Maybe a mini rant. How about that? A mini rant?
Fair enough.
Absolutely. Ezzy, chime in.
That was a rant. That was a rant. Not a mini rant. That was a full rant.
Alrighty. It was a little bit of a rant. Alrighty. Let's go to the final segment as we do every week. Cheers and or jeers. I will start with the man to my right wearing his fanciest orange IllegalCurve.com t-shirt. Ezra Ginsberg, rant, cheer or jeer?
Thank you very much for giving our listeners a visual picture, by the way. My jeer is going to come as no surprise. I have to give my jeer to Brent Sutter. I don't like the fact that he's not honoring his contract. I'm not saying that it's, you know, illegal or immoral. I don't think it's very fair to the fans of New Jersey. You know, he started something in New Jersey in his first 2 years, and I think that if he signed a 3-year contract, he should be coaching there next year and not hiding the fact that he really wants to go to Calgary. Nothing against him personally, of course, but it doesn't really sit well with me, and that's going to be my jeer.
Well, seems fair. Richie? What were you going to say?
Well, my cheer is going to be the opposite of Ezra's jeer.
Your cheer is for Brent Sutter?
I'm giving a cheer to Brent Sutter, and I know that people are getting on him. I'm giving him a cheer because in this day and age, I think it's admirable that he's putting the family first. And some people, you might look at it, you know, with a bit of skepticism, and I don't. I think that he really, truly wants to be back home, close to his family, close to his daughter, close to his brothers, and I think that is... I personally am going to give him a pat on the back and say, good for you, and... You obviously spoke about Lamarillo before, about how long you'd last in New Jersey or wouldn't, and I think that it's a... I give him a cheer for that.
Hold on,
Rebut other people's cheers or jeers, but Ezra, you're waving at me, so go right ahead.
I want to put an asterisk besides that jeer. If he stays at home in Alberta and spends the time with his family and on his Red Deer Rebels, then you can erase that jeer. My personal jeer. Okay. If he takes the job with Calgary, the head coaching job with Calgary, then my jeer stays.
I totally agree with that, Ezzy. Totally.
That's right, Dave. You've got my back.
2-1. I'm still standing strong, Drew.
I'm not going to even touch that issue, really. I think that, if anything, that the Red Deer Tourism Board should give Brent Sutter some sort of award of distinction because he seems to love it. I don't understand quite why he loves it so much.
Drew, what's your cheer jeer tonight?
My cheer jeer tonight is I'm going to jeer Danny Heatley. I think that you signed a contract to be the big man in Ottawa. You have to abide by that contract. And hang on, Dave's chiming in.
Yeah, we got a caller who wants to also chime in on this last jeer.
This is a late call.
I told him we'll make it quick.
Okay,
so pick up line one.
We'll make a real kick. What, do you know his name?
Yeah, it's Kev.
Kev, thanks for joining us. Chime in on the cheer, Jir.
How's it going, guys?
Good, how you doing?
What's up, Kev?
I want to say, as far as that Jir goes, between Sutter and Red Deer, Calgary, it's a commute. You can go from Calgary to Red Deer, you know? I still don't think that's... If he's going to see his family, that's not, it's not that far. I don't think your Jir should be contingent upon that. That's my only point.
I respect that. I respect that, Kev. I would just appreciate it more if he would just, you know, let maybe it's not necessarily the best to play the media game where he says I'm actually going to pursue the Calgary head coaching job, but you know, he's new, he's Lamoriello's guy, he's New Jersey's coach, and if it is family, that's one thing, but if it's professional interests, then it's just unfortunate for New Jersey, because now they've probably got to go with someone such as a John McClain or a Jacques Lemaire, which maybe doesn't mean that they're going to have success. But I'm a huge Brent Sutter fan. It's just and a New Jersey Devils fan. It's unfortunate, because I think that he could still get them to the Cup Finals.
It doesn't matter. Whoever Lamoriello hires, he'll fire 10 games before the end of the regular season and rehire Robbie Fetorik for the 8th time or something like that. Kev, thanks for the call. We're out of time for this week on the IllegalCurve.com radio show. We'd like to thank David Turnbull for his fabulous job running our boards tonight as usual and chiming in. He does a bang-up job on that front. We encourage you to continue to check out www.IllegalCurve.com. It has all your breaking news for everything NHL-related. Big thank you today to James Myrtle of SB Nation from TheRink.com and The Globe and Mail. Big thank you to Kelly Rudy of Hockey Night in Canada. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Richard Pollock, I am Drew Mandel. Good night and good luck.